It's time for Mac Break Weekly. Jim Dalrymple joins the gang. Andy Iannocco, Renee Ritchie. We're going to talk about the new iPhone. We've all got ours. We'll give you a tour of some of the best features, some that you may not know about yet. Plus, how to get ready for tomorrow. El Capitan is coming. It's all ahead on Mac Break Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Mac Break Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 474, recorded Tuesday, September 29th, 2015. Bros Gold. Mac Break Weekly is brought to you by Unity, the free home media server. Stream your media and files from any computer you own to your iOS devices. For more information and to download Unity for free, visit getunity.com/twit. That's getyounity.com/twit. And by Casper, an online retailer of premium mattresses for a fraction of the price, because everyone deserves a great night's sleep. Get $50 off any mattress purchase by visiting casper.com/macbreak. That's casper.com/macbreak. And don't forget to use the promo code MACBREAK. And by lynda.com, the online learning platform with over 3,000 on-demand video courses to help you strengthen your business, technology, and creative skills. For a free 10-day trial, visit lynda.com/macbreak. That's lynda.com/macbreak. It's time for Mac Break Weekly, the show where we cover the latest Apple news. And guess what? It's pinkish. Joining me right now with his pink iPhone 6S Plus, Renee Ritchie from iMore.com.
So ooh, pink.
Both of them. Yeah. You got the silver on the, or what do they call it, aluminum on the little
yeah,
one?
Yeah, silver on the 6S and so much rose gold on the 6S yeah. Plus.
It really, there's a lot of expanse. On the back
it's like
that
dress, Leo. It looks gold, then it looks white, then it looks pink. It's going to be controversy.
Yeah, I really want to. I'm here to tell you, while if you look at it straight on, and that's why all the pictures look pink, it is pink. But tilt it just a little bit, it gets coppery, and then a little more, and it turns gold. It's actually, I sound like I'm rationalizing. It's actually very manly.
Like a party on a phone.
Andy Iannocco is also here from the Chicago Sun-Times. Hi, Andy.
Hello, Leo. And I hope that, see, I was actually looking forward to having like a rose gold phone, and somebody, people in the press have been ruining it by saying that, oh, now there's a trend for men to get pink iPhones. They're calling it bros gold. Like, nobody's calling it that. You're stupid. You're trying to get take a individual's personal preference and elevate it into a lifestyle trend. Stop doing that.
Rose gold.
Go get a cookie. Get your blood sugar back up. You will stop coming up with ideas like trying
press
to put
select
the word
all, press delete.
Bro in front of things.
That's yeah. Depressing. Bros gold. So as you pointed out before the show began, and I'm now scanning through it because I didn't know it had come out, a non-tech Joshua Ho has put out, and they usually really focus on benchmarks and numbers, kind of getting down and dirty on it. They've put out their preliminary results on the new iPhone. Renee, you're going to have to summarize for me.
So, in the proud tradition of Anand and Brian Klug, they're just getting deep into the silicon here. And
by the way, we should mention that both Anand and Brian Klug now work for Apple.
Yes, but Anantech has been bought by Perch, so they're the same company as Laptop Mag and Tom's Guide and Tom's Hardware.
And they have a strong kind of roadmap about what differentiates them, and it's the numbers, it's the geeks, it's the benchmarks, it's the deep dive. So they're going to continue that, which is great.
Yeah, and Josh is enormously intelligent. I think he's about 12 years old, and I don't mean that.
He's a kid.
It is crazy how smart
he
is.
So. And Nan started it when he was in high school. I interviewed him when he was 16.
It's the tradition. It's amazing. The technology, like we were talking about, is dual source. It means they're getting parts from TSMC, I think I'm getting the right order, and Samsung. And that's really hard because they're on different processes and you want similar results. But last year we saw like the iPhones shipped with the A8 processor and the iPad Air 2 did, but the iPad Mini didn't. There just weren't enough processors. And this year, they're shipping tens of millions of phones, and they don't want to run out, and dual sourcing it is super smart. But it's the details in there, like what they're doing with the NAND flash storage in order to get this. It's similar to what they were doing with the MacBook storage. And when the difference between those devices starts to disappear, the idea of how powerful and how performant you can make a mobile device gets really, really interesting.
They always, like, I didn't know this, but Anand says they'd always written their own or designed their own custom controllers for the SSD, the storage in the phone. And then this controller looks a lot like the MacBook SSD controller. Apple's always really focused on speed and SSD on the computer side. It does make a difference, though.
In this phone, they're using they're using different kinds of RAM. I don't know if it's the same for the S models yet, but for the 6 and 6 Plus, they were using MLC multi-layer for the lower storage devices and TLC twin layer. And TLC is cheaper NAND, but they're doing a lot to sort of mitigate this or make it just as fast for normal operations, even though it isn't traditionally as speedy a technology.
But I have to say this phone is a beast. And boy, if you look at the NAND read and write benchmarks, it is so far beyond, the 6S Plus is so far beyond anything we've seen before. Almost twice the speed of the Galaxy S6 and S6 Edge.
It's what you get when you have like the kind of money Apple does, but you're also writing for a specific operating system and platform. For example, when Qualcomm makes a chip, it might get sold for a Windows phone and for an Android phone. So it's got to support OpenGL, but it's got to support DirectX, and you're carrying sort of that load whether you use it or not. And Apple can write specifically for what they want to do with the phone.
Although that's for sequential reads. The random reads, actually, the S6 beats it.
Yeah.
Who knows what?
Although they're saying that might be a limitation of the test and not a limitation of data, so they're going
to
look at it.
Yeah, that seems a little odd, to be honest. Sequential reads would do better on a spinning medium, but it shouldn't make much difference on a random access medium like NAND chips. Nevertheless, we're seeing a pretty speedy little device, and it's almost as fast on Chrome, Safari, and IE as the Surface Pro 3, which is pretty good for a mobile device. And, you know, just in my pure anecdotal experience, the iPhone 6S Plus feels extremely snappy. I was actually crediting some of that to the fact that it finally has 2 gigs of RAM.
Yeah, it's also got it's much faster. It's got a 1.8 gigahertz. Now it's called a Twister, the Apple A9 Twister processor in it.
Apparently the S6 also uses NVMe, so it's a similar NAND technology, which would explain why it's up there.
This is one of the reasons why I'm looking forward to the iPad Pro so much. It's an iOS device, but it really shows you how much performance a phone or a laptop leaves on the table when it's just has to use off the shelf components. When you really do build everything to work together for this one application, you'd leave nothing on the table.
Metal performance, as one would expect, extremely good, almost competitive with the Air 2, which is the current Metal. Metal is the DirectX, the gaming subsystem for graphics.
It's Apple's version, yeah.
Yeah, and very good. I mean, just impressive as heck.
They leave nothing for the swim back.
Yeah. Web browsing battery life, also better than anybody else in the market for the 6S Plus. You might expect, a little bit worse on the 6.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. No, the 6 is better than the 6S Plus. Sorry. But close. I mean, those, you know, unfortunately, we look at benchmarks and go, well, I see that it's better. And it's not that you could ever measure the difference between 12.90 seconds and 13 point.
They're synthetic. Sorry, they're synthetic.
Yeah, nobody sits there and goes, ching, 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 page after page after page. I've been finding the battery life to be supremely good on the 6S Plus. Easily gets me through the day. Even yesterday when I used it a lot, I demoed it a lot, I unplugged it very early in the morning, went to bed late, and I still had 20% left. And that, if there were nothing else, that would predispose me to use the iPhone.
It's hard the first day when you set up the new phone because iCloud Photo Library wants to download and everything wants to re-index and spotlight. So some people panic immediately and they say, oh, the battery is terrible. But if you usually let it go that day, By the next day, it's willing to go day and a half.
I never judge in the first few days. I'm playing with a thing more than I should be. And, you know, you can't judge battery life until you get it back into kind of a normal rhythm.
What's great is iOS 9, if you go to the battery thing and you go into preferences, it now shows you background and foreground activity. So it'll tell you it's using power because you're leaving the screen on or because you're transferring stuff. So it's much more easy to see why and where the power is going.
The other thing, I'm sorry to leave you out of this, Andy, but we just don't want you to feel too bad with your old phone.
It's coming this week.
Oh, you're getting one. Good.
Yes.
Oh, good. I think you'll be suitably impressed. Of course, the question always when there's an S update is should I get the new phone? And surprisingly for this one, I think that this is better enough than the 6 or the 6 Plus that you probably should get it. Some of the features like 3D Touch are much more significant than I had originally thought.
Yeah, I think 3D Touch is really the key. There are a lot of little improvements, but they've never added to the vocabulary of iOS as they have with this one feature. And now I've had multiple chances to actually. I have a couple of days with someone else's iPhone 6P, and the ability to simply drill down into a feature and just convert. Here's what I want to do to that thing getting done in the limited least amount of steps possible. That's going to be transformative. That's the one thing that would get me if I had bought an iPhone 6 like late last year, and I'm trying to think, geez, should I spend $800 to replace a perfectly good phone? That would be the one thing that might tip me towards actually doing that. Although I still worry about replacing $800 phone after 1 year. Yeah. But that's the one thing. But I think one business trip in which you're trying to make reservations, you're trying to pull up notes, you're trying to get this, that, and the other done, and you get to do it not by navigating through 8 different apps, but by simply tapping an icon 8 different times. That might be the thing that says, you know what, before this, I've got 5 minutes before the cabin doors close. I'm using those 5 minutes to go into the Apple store and have one of these phones waiting for me by the time I get home, because that's going to be a frustration saver.
Josh, let me show some people some of the nice features of 3D Touch. So there's still a tap, as always. You could just tap the phone. You can also tap and hold, not press, but hold. Do you not have an over-the-camera shot? We're working on the shot. Mm-hmm. Tap and hold. So, for instance, if you want to get the jiggle, jiggle, jiggle on the icons, you tap and hold. Is that right? No, you do have to press a little bit, don't you? Tap and hold. There we go. That's a little bit difficult still. It takes a little practice to get to that point. But if you press, there's a haptic tap. Okay, there we go. Let me find it in here. Okay, here we go. There we go. So there's if you press and hold, there's a haptic tap. So that pops up a menu up to 5 items in that menu, right? Four items,
2 lines each with an icon. Yeah.
And of course you don't know, it's kind of like right clicking. You don't know what you're going to get. You also don't know if an app will do anything. Most apps not from Apple don't. And even some apps from Apple don't. The settings doesn't do anything.
One tip is that they have both static and dynamic commands, and the dynamic ones won't populate until you've launched the app at least once. So sometimes people will press the icon and nothing will happen, but then just press the app, the app will open, and after that, you'll see like your messages, your contacts, your videos, all that will populate.
I love it that the contacts give you the 3 people you've called the most, or the phone gives you the 3 people you've called the most, and then create new contact. These are the kinds of things that just power users, it just makes such a big difference for. And I guess everybody will become a little bit more of a power user once you start getting used to using this. You do have to learn a little bit about which apps will do it. The only third-party app I've found so far that does it is Instagram, right?
Instagram does it. Workflow does it. Apple has a list up on iTunes now. There's about a good dozen of really popular ones that support it, yeah.
Good. Instagram does it, and I think does it both on the icon. And, of course, it's up to the developer to choose the 4 items it's going to populate that with. In this case, for Instagram, new post, view activity, search, and direct seem sensible. But it also does it within the app, which is pretty nice. If you see somebody on Instagram you like and you force touch, or what do they call it, pop, peek,
peep? Yeah, you can peek.
Peek. You peek by holding the button. Then you can see their other posts, which I think is great. So there's going to be some discovery involved, because not everything even in the app does that. And there's no, I don't, you know, maybe it's documented somewhere, but who reads manuals for apps?
So iMovie, Dropbox, Shazam, Things, Evernote, Pinterest, Endless Alphabet, and OpenTable so far.
I use OpenTable, so I'll have to, that's good to know. All right. I think this is, as you say, Andy, it's the first time in a long time In fact, the first time I can remember since iOS came out that there's been a significant new user interface feature.
It's very much on trend. Everywhere you go, developers and operating system architects are trying to find ways to make you never, ever have to launch an app. How quickly can they get you to the feature within the app or the data within the app that you're looking for?
I've been saying for a while, and I'm stealing this from Phil Libin, who used to run Evernote, that we're going to move eventually into the post-app world. And everybody says, well, what does that mean? How do you not have apps? But this is a first step into that post-app world. But the idea that you don't have to always be living inside an app, that you can move fluidly around. The other really nice thing, and I thank Jason Snell for showing me, because I did not know about this feature, is the force touch and swipe from Edge.
Yeah.
And that's not something, I don't know if that's been documented or where it's been documented, but you can, so if you have to swipe in from the left edge with a force touch, and then you're either going to get the Resense switcher, which is newly designed, but the greatest thing, and really useful for entering passwords, for instance, when I'm first setting it up, you know, everything's in LastPass. So I'm in an app and I want to quickly swipe over to LastPass. So if you swipe it all the way, you go to the last app you used. So it makes it very easy to go back and forth between an apps and LastPass and quickly enter passwords in and stuff. I'm very happy with.
And it's nice because if you just swipe, you go backwards within the hierarchy of the app. But if you force swipe, you go back within the hierarchy of the apps. So inter versus intra app.
Right.
And it's very similar motions.
Yeah. So this is, I guess, the back button that we have for so long wanted. And it's really better than a back button because the behavior is predictable.
And it's direct manipulation, which most people find easier to understand.
Right.
Yeah. And also, they often will throw up labels there. You see that even if you don't have force touch, you'll see in the upper left-hand corner of the screen in iOS 9, you will see a back button. And then
what you're
going back to.
Yeah.
So I have to admit, that's even after a whole summer of using iOS, I'm still instinctively looking for I'm someplace where I'm done with this screen, or I don't want to be here anymore. How do I get back where I was before?
People mock the back button on Android, but honestly, that was a very big difference and a big improvement.
I'm just thrilled to see all the cross pollination between iOS and Android these days. I mean, during the Google event today, there were people saying, "Oh, so I guess that Google is just playing catch up with Apple." Just like there are people saying, the iPad Pro, I guess Apple's just trying to do the Surface Pro. No, it's great when all these companies are saying that's a really good idea. It would really help out our users. We're going to do it. We're going to put our own spin on it. And we're going to find a way that makes sense for us for our own aesthetic and for our own principles. But anything that makes it better for all users, who cares where it came from?
Yeah, I said on the Google event, Microsoft must really feel validated because everybody's copying the Surface Pro 3. And then I realized maybe they don't feel so validated. Maybe they feel ripped off. I don't know. I'm not going to speak for you, Microsoft.
Consistency is a user feature, though. Like, the more normal people can just pick up something and use it, the better it is for everybody.
Yeah, I don't have to represent a company. Oh, there's Jim Dalrymple. His update has completed, ladies and gentlemen, from theloopinsight.com. Jim Dalrymple, he updated his beard today, and it just took a little extra time. No, were you going to El Capitan, Jim?
Well, I had a 15-inch Pro, and I updated the version of El Capitan, but the computer had died in the meantime. So, it had to recover, which I must say, as a test, worked out very well. It may be late for seeing you, which I'm sorry about.
No problem.
But it was a good test because it rebooted itself and, a couple of times and everything was fine.
I love the fact that you can do a network install of the operating system on Macintoshes. Mm-hmm. They deserve so much credit for that, because if you don't have a boot disk, let's say your Mac drive just dies, which I take it is what happened to you. You put a new drive in, but you don't have any way of you just do a network install of the operating system, recover your data because you've been backing it up, and you're good to go. And I've done this a number of times now, and it really is a marvelous situation. Do you use iCloud backup? Is that why it was easier?
Actually, it was the battery that died on mine.
Oh, that's weird.
During the update.
Oh.
So,
trashed the drive.
Yeah, it just kind of crashed. And then when I restarted, it just recovered and everything was great. Can I add one point to what Andy was saying?
Sure.
About what you guys were just talking about before I magically showed up in the background. You know, I agree that having companies take an idea and expand on that idea and making it their own is a great thing. It's a great thing for the users, and that kind of competition is great. Where I think we'll probably all agree that it's not so great is when companies like Samsung come in and just copy, you know, edge for edge, feature for feature, and do nothing else with it. That's, to me, that's a real problem. And that's why I have such a problem with Samsung. You know, I think HTC over the past couple of years have done some great work. You know, they've tried, and, you know, unsuccessfully, sadly, that to make things work. Microsoft with the Surface, I gave Microsoft credit for the Surface and their idea. I don't think it was a good idea because we're just not ready for it yet. But they didn't just copy the iPad. They took that idea and the things that they have worked with before in tablets, a decade before Apple did, and made the Surface. And it's great. It's great that they took that and ran with their own idea. So, you know, there's a big difference in what's happening in the market with tablets and smartphones and some of the companies that are trying to advance the technology. Yeah.
I agree 100%. I was in the Metropolitan Museum of Art a couple of weeks ago and saw someone who had a permit to actually reproduce a painting. So she had she was making this beautiful copy of this 100-year-old American painting. When I blogged about it, I reflected on the difference between copying something and reproducing it. That she wasn't just simply saying, I want exactly one of these. It was, I want to rebuild this and understand everything that this artist went through as they were conceiving this, and in doing so learn something about how great things are created. And I think that engineering works the same way. You can tell in the case of Samsung where they will just simply say, "Ooh, that's nice, thinks I think we'll have it," versus how other companies do it, which is to say, I really like the way that fingerprint recognition works on the iPhone. Let's try to understand all the decisions that Apple put into this. Let's understand the reasons why it works so well. And then let's let that inform us as we erase the whiteboard of all the notes we made and then create something that works for us. So that's an excellent point.
Well, and it would be great if somebody came out and said, you know what, I think what Apple did with the iPad is completely wrong. That's not the way that it should work. And that's kind of how I feel that Microsoft did it. They said, no, one operating system, you know, across the board. And that's, you know, that's different than what Apple did.
We all learned that lesson. Oh,
congratulations. You know,
but they did innovate.
That's the way you want to do it.
I have to point out, though, that there are some things that are so small they don't need to be reinvented. A trash can, for instance. And, of course, Apple was pissed when Microsoft had a recycle bin on Windows. When even sued them. But that's an example of, what are you going to rethink, reinvent the trash
can? They did draw the trash can to make
they drew it differently. They gave it a different name.
The problem with Samsung is that they'll put like the Touch ID or whatever interface, and they don't make it match the rest of the interface. It's like they take one part of a car, stick it in a plane, and say, done.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, whatever. I mean, look, you know what? Start feeling bad for Samsung because things are going to get a lot worse.
Especially with Nexuses like that on the market.
You know, after seeing this Google event, I think that they're, you know, yes, Microsoft should be thrilled that Google has acknowledged that a keyboard with a tablet with a hinge makes a lot of sense, as Apple has with the iPad Pro. I think the real message of the new Nexus phones is you'd be crazy to buy a modified Android device if you can get hardware that's as good as Samsung's or HTC's with a pure Android. There's no market.
Isn't that weird though, Leo? Like, you have the Surface, which is they try to position it against the iPad or the MacBook, but it really is positioned against the OEMs as well. And the Nexus, they go out of their way to show it versus the iPhone, but it clearly is also positioned against their OEMs. And it's a weird position that both Google and Microsoft find them in when they make their own hardware and they have
partners. But it's a very different relationship, because remember, Android OEMs are not the same as Windows OEMs. They're not paying as much. In many cases, they're not paying anything. That's a different world. People choose Android not because they want to make a compatible device. They choose Android because it's a free operating system. It's easy to do. I was talking to Phil Baker, who was the product developed the Pono player for Neil Young. I said, why'd you choose Android for the Pono player? Because it's free. That's there a very different experience than the OEMs for Windows. How did you like AC/DC, Jim?
It was incredible. Incredible.
Great show.
And I went to Yak Sing for lunch.
Yak Sing is the dim sum place in San Francisco. You liked it?
And Angus Young was sitting right beside me.
What the what?
Yeah.
Did you say anything?
I said hi.
Hi, Angus. love the shorts.
Angus, what's up?
He's. I had to look up his age because he's running around on stage. He's running up. He's climbing on the speakers. He's doing all the stuff he's done for 40 years.
Yep.
And so he's 60, and he looks great.
Yes, he does.
Yeah.
And he went out there for 2 hours and blew everybody away. It was amazing.
Yeah, that's solo.
Is the Angus selfie harder to get than the Johnny Ives selfie, though, Jim?
Did you? Come on, Jim. Admit it. You did a little of the, let me see what's going on my phone here. Just a little of that, right? Come on. That's neat.
They wouldn't have anything to do with, any pictures or anything.
No, of course not. Yeah.
No, and most of them won't when they're, they're out for.
No, I don't blame them. Yeah. Don't bug celebrities. I just hate it when I'm bothered at a meal. those paparazzi, they've just got to stop.
Still haven't scored a Laporte selfie.
I know.
There's not much demand.
Jim, you got, speaking of that, though, you got me hating the Twitter interface even worse. You ever have that thing where, you click into it, and then you get to see what the last update was for, one quarter of a second before it re-updates and things scroll down in hyperspace?
Yeah.
So I got a subliminal look of, was that Jim having a selfie with Johnny? I could not find it again.
It was and I'm subliminal.
Like, sure was.
It was subliminal.
If it were anybody else, I would think that I just saw somebody with a shaven head next to it. But no, it's just like,
somebody in the chat room, Compy386, Jim says they should rename Yang Sing to Sushi DC.
Oh, good one.
They could expand their clientele in all kinds of ways, couldn't they?
We can just go up at night and hang that sign over the
Sushi DC. So, talking about other features, what you've missed is just a tour of new iPhone 6 features, 6S features. Mm. And you please pitch in with your favorite. We were showing the new Force Touch features, and you got to give and the swipe in from the side with Force Touch. But I have to say there's
the keyboard yet, Leo?
Yeah, let's talk. That's exactly where I was going, is with the keyboard here.
Oh, great.
First of all, thank you for lowercase. I know John Gruber has turned it off in accessibility, but I, for one, I really like the lowercase. I know what I'm doing. Yeah.
So do I. I like it. I saw that John didn't like it. I couldn't figure out why, but
some people have a harder time reacquiring a glyph if it changes. Like, you're looking at the letter A, then it changes to a lowercase or uppercase, and it takes you a second to reacquire that glyph, and some people find that a little annoying.
He said it was blinky blinky, but remember, this was also when he was using it in beta. Maybe it did look a little blinky blinky or something in beta. It's very smooth. It's just how a digital device should be. Every other smartphone does it this way.
The age of the typewriter is over.
Yeah, it's not a Selectric, gang. And finally, Apple acknowledged that. But no, I was going to talk about one of the just coolest features. And without Force Touch, you might not know it exists. But because on the iPad, you use two fingers and you get the cursor control. On the iPhone, you force touch. When I show this to people, in lieu of the magnifying glass, and I say, see, you can go anywhere and you move the cursor, they squee. They go crazy. Yeah.
Double force press, Leo. You can do it right away.
What do you mean? Double force press on the text?
On the trackpad. So press down on the track, turn the trackpad. Now release a little bit and press again, and it should just highlight the words for you.
Oh, it gets the word. You can double.
Yeah, so press down and hold down, and then sort of press deeper.
This is one of those things where you're learning things that, there you go.
Yeah.
That take a little while to kind of internalize, physically. Get the muscle memory.
What a great week for BlackBerry to debut their brand new Android phone with a slide-up mechanical keyboard.
Did you see the CEO, was it John Chen, try to demo the new BlackBerry?
It's not as easy as Sybase.
How do you do Force Touch on the BlackBerry?
With the real keys.
With a hammer.
Yeah, exactly. But maybe he'll give you an iPhone if you break enough of them.
I'm going to say this is a good week for Apple and Google and a very bad week for anybody else who makes smartphones. Anyway, I think this is, I don't know. It's so funny. I don't know why. I guess because you needed the Force Touch hardware. But this is, thank you. It's so much of a better way
to move the cursor around in text. I just love it. Yep. Okay, so we showed the slide over. We showed the three. Oh, we didn't show live photos. Live photos does not work, unfortunately, on the home screen, but it does work on the lock screen. So this is one of the stock live photos that comes with the iPhone. Of course, you'll replace it with your own. But just the built-in animation. I'm loving live photos.
Yeah, especially when it's a pet or a child or just a moment that you really want to capture.
You nailed it. The child is the is a great one because they're moving. They're not static creatures. Pets too. I have a great one of Ozzy. I don't see how I can find it. Looking out the window with the wind in his hair, and it's just so great. Well, I have a cat instead of a dog. but this cat is yawning. So you can have a great picture of your pet, but there's something more when a child, and you get a little audio and you get a little video and the child is moving. I don't know why it does that weird thing at the beginning. That's something I did wrong. That's
transitioning from the JPEG to the MOV file.
Yeah, you have to. That's another thing. You really have to learn how to take these and not put the phone down too fast. But once you do, my advice, it was your advice. I think, Renee, leave live photos on because it doesn't matter if you didn't do it right because the times you do, you will be so grateful.
Yeah. And you can go back and delete them if you're out of space.
And you can always turn live photos off on an individual photo. If it's so bad, you can just turn it off and then it's done.
Yeah. Of course, the issue with live photos, and, I posted that lovely picture of Ozzy to Instagram and immediately just flattened it. And I would really love to see more people support live photos. It will have to be on iOS, you think?
It's a JPEG file and a MOV file together. So theoretically, other people could hack it.
An MOV, QuickTime MOV movie file. Yeah. Well, I saw Serenity's hack. Was it Serenity's? It was on iMore where you, it's simple. You want to put that live photo on Instagram? No problem. You need a cable. You hook it up to a Macintosh. You download a GIF. I think it was yours, Renee. You download a GIF program that converts the MOV file into a GIF, and then you copy it back over to the iPhone, and then you upload it to Instagram.
See, that was Serenity's. Mine was just use one phone to film the other phone and then upload that.
Oh, I like that.
She's way smarter than me.
Yeah, Mel. Yeah, but nobody's going to do that. That's crazy. It will be nice when Facebook supports this. You'll see a lot of these, I think.
Or Workflow will just do something like automatically turn it into a GIF for you and upload it.
Workflow could do it. That's right.
Yeah,
that's right. Somebody's asking iBookery in their chat room. Hi, iBookery. Met him at the event in New York City. It's good to see you again. Ask you about space considerations with live photo.
Yeah, they're twice the size. So like if you shoot everything as a live photo, you'll go through your storage twice as fast. But most people won't keep every one of them. So just occasionally go through and delete the ones you don't want.
Now, see, I keep all of mine. And what my usage of the iPhone has changed so much over the years that I only keep optimized versions of everything on the iPhone. My music is all in the cloud, so I have a ton of space on my phone. So
if you
live photos really wasn't a huge consideration space wise.
If you use iCloud photo library and turn on optimized only. It will optimize the live photos as well.
Yeah, you'll get the thumbnail and it'll send the rest to the cloud.
So it will reduce the size of that. So I think Apple, that is, I'm not a fan of technologies that happen behind your back and just assume they know what the right thing to do is. But this is one exception where I think they really does make a difference. You just say, hey, just put the optimized version on my phone. I'll let you make sure that I don't run out of space. I think that's it works very well.
Yeah, Apple's always very smart about that. For instance, all the way back when they introduced HDR, it will sidecar both the HDR version and the original version so that, or when you use one of those, lame Instagram type effects with the camera app, that you accidentally trigger all that. I accidentally triggered those all the time, and I was so mad because I thought that it had shot like a morning's worth of pictures with this stupid super saturated Polaroid effect until I got home and docked the phone. So, okay, it's all right. They saved both kinds. So they're really, really very thoughtful in all things.
So Renee, can you walk me through, somebody in the chat room wants to see side by side apps. Now it really doesn't make a lot of sense on a small screen. It's, I think, mostly for the iPad Pro,
But I can't do it, right?
No, it's iPad only. The split view apps.
It's iPad only. Okay. Yeah. Can I do picture in picture on the iPhone?
No. All that's still iPad only.
Okay.
That stuff even works really well on the iPad Mini. I even have the iPad Mini 2, which can't do like live apps side by side, but just the ability when you get a notification that says, "Hey, you've got an iChat message," to simply swipe in from the right, have a live tile that simply has here's the messages app to actually respond and have a conversation, and then swipe it back and be right back where you were before without having ever left the document you've been creating or the whatever it is you've been watching or reading. That's such a time saver.
All right, so I think I've gone through most of the new features. As you mentioned, I think we mentioned this last week, the fingerprint reader is so fast that you have to change your behavior. If you're one of those people who uses the home button to quickly get a look at notifications, oh, it's locked, so it's not going to do that. This is not my phone, it's Lisa's. But if you use the home button to pop up the screen, you immediately go right out of it. Yeah. The fingerprint reader is so fast. So you have to start using the on-off button if you want to look at notifications or see what time.
The really cool thing, too, is the 3D touch. They even, like, for example, if you're in your messages and you just see the list of faces, you can 3D touch on those faces to get other contact options. You can do that in the Siri search screen as well. So they've gone through and populated a lot of – just if you play around with it and you say, I wish I could do that, sometimes you really can do that. And then, it accelerates you through the operating system.
Yeah, look at that. So this is messages. This is my information. And because it knows I'm on an iCloud or on an iPhone, it says FaceTime audio, message, FaceTime, mail, add to exist. That's really nice. That is really nice. There are features, though, like this force swipe in from the left that aren't immediately obvious. Are there any that I've missed?
Most of them are just those. Though, like in Maps, you can go and you can force press and get a bunch of. Right. Most of it is a straight force press. The edge gesture is really just to differentiate it from trying to hit an icon or trying to do a regular swipe. So it's that one's a little bit differently. You got to get used to pressing down and then swiping. But most of them are really simple.
And a lot of finding out where everything is.
Yes,
it's just exploring. You know, you a new app is installed. Force touch on the icon and see what happens.
Yeah. I would recommend going through settings. There are lots of new things and changes and differences, and it's probably worth just at least once going through them. For instance, and I just really love this. There are so many things that I really rejected on the old iPhone. They kept me off of the iPhone that they fixed. This is one. Notifications normally are grouped by app. And you have to painstakingly go through each app to delete them. And that X is so tiny to clear them. But now you can change the sort order to recent and turn off group by app. And suddenly your notifications are in chronological order with one delete button up at the top. Oh, sweet mystery of life, I have found you.
You can also go in and change the 3D touch so that it's either lighter or heavier.
And I did that too.
Yeah.
What did you do with yours?
I have mine on medium still because I was triggering it too easily with light, so I went back to medium.
I switched to light because I like it a little bit better because I was getting blisters on my face.
And there was a great tip from Paul Kafasis of Rogue Amoeba. If you're having trouble doing the jiggly mode, you can just press as hard as you want on a folder, and because a folder has no force, no 3D touch state, it'll automatically go into jiggly mode. Yeah.
Sweet. Where do I turn off? Where do I change?
Accessibility.
You must go into accessibility. You might say, well, I don't need, but there are so many things in here that you might want. Turning off motion, for instance. That's where John Gruber goes to turn off the lowercase keys on his keyboard. Weird, but possible. And then here's a 3D touch section. And I turned mine to light. It's light, medium, or firm. And then you can test it and see, is it how hard do I have to do it? The haptics on this make the difference, don't they? That feedback really is important.
Well, it really is. It makes you feel like you're actually doing something when you press on it.
Yeah.
And, you know, having that feedback, it's an interactive type of gesture.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they had formidable engineers working on this, just really, really talented people.
Yeah, that haptic engine is not small. You had to get that in here, they had to reduce the size of the battery, kind of rejigger the insides of the device.
Yeah, it has to feel real.
Yeah.
That whole 3D touch idea, that was mine.
Nice.
Well, I really mocked it because I've used Force Touch, and I found it not to be intuitive and not to be very useful. But this is not that. So if you thought, well, I've tried Force Touch on a MacBook or on my watch, I don't like it. This is 3D Touch. They were right to rename it. It's a different thing entirely.
It's like a warp tunnel through iOS, Leo. Yeah. That's how I keep describing it.
Yeah. Makes you hopeful for whatever they might show off at WWDC next year to make Force Touch a little bit more rational, a little bit more consistent on all these other devices, because I had the exact same complaint as you did. Even after a whole summer of wearing Apple Watch, I don't instinctively look to Force Touch things because my brain has not been wired yet to expect Force Touch to do something consistently.
Right.
But even just the couple days I've had with the new iPhones, it's like, nope, I know exactly how this works. I know exactly what to expect from it. And you're Force Touching like the doodah, man.
Wow.
Write that down. I think we have a show title.
I finally got a show title in there. Yes.
Finally, you're the number one generator of show titles.
I don't know. I'm good at seeing the show titles genius in others. I'm like Salieri. I can see the genius that God has implanted in the three of you without.
As a hearing aid wearer, I really like it. One of the ways that Apple does accessibility better than anybody else, the support for hearing aids is really fantastic. They actually have custom drivers in here. I don't have my hearing aids paired with this phone, but once you do, you can actually pass audio into the hearing aid, so you can listen, which is actually a very good stealth way to listen to an audiobook on your hearing aids. That's legal in every country.
What in the world?
CarPlay. I really want this to work, but I don't have one yet that does. But that's going to be a nice feature as well. Anything else? I mean, just
the new camera. I mean, like, it's amazing. We haven't even talked about the new camera yet.
You know, I don't want to be one of those nitpickers Jim Dalrymple hates so much. But I don't know why, but I expected more from the new camera. It's great. Look, Apple's always had one of the best cameras, not the best necessarily, but one of the best cameras. And this one's good. It doesn't blow me away. Does it?
Maybe you need glasses along with those.
Damn you, Jim Dalrymple.
Serenity and I took it for a walk through New York City late at night. And
I
we
know.
Were just
those were, the low lights were very, very good. Although my AC/DC pictures didn't come out all that great.
So if you have live photo turned on, it reduces the low light considerably. You want to turn live photo off if you're going to do a lot of
light. Didn't know that. This is a pano. Did I have better seats than you, Jim, or worse?
About the same, I think. I think about the same. I was over to the left. Right.
Or the right. Okay. Oh, you had more home plate access. Okay.
Yes.
Thank goodness for giant screens. That's all I can say, because Angus was a little tiny guy there. And I didn't bring my horns. Did you bring your horns, Jim?
I did not. I didn't bring my. I mean, mine are under my hat all the time. So
he brought the beard.
I don't know when that became a thing, but it is the thing at an AC/DC concert to wear blinky horns. Everybody does.
Ever since the AC/DC figured out that people would buy them for like $30,
that's when.
Those
now,
shorts aren't cheap.
I have to say this. If you've ever tried to take a concert picture distant from the stage with a camera phone, this actually is pretty impressive. I mean, that's a low, very low light. It's dark, basically, with an extremely bright light in the middle.
Now, I have some pictures that I took of the AC/DC show in August. So with the iPhone 6 Plus. And, I mean, you couldn't make out any detail in those photos.
Yeah.
It was just when the lights shine.
Yeah.
It was just, like a white light on the stage. That's all you saw. You couldn't see any detail like you can on these ones.
This is about as challenging an environment for any camera as you can imagine.
Camera.
Yeah. Color balance, weird, dark to very, the dynamic range is infinite. The detail on the people's heads is very good. I mean, it's not a great picture. I'm not saying... But you're right. I mean, this is zoomed in. So the other thing 12 megapixels gives you is the ability to zoom without degrading the photo as much. And as you can tell, I mean, this is quite, from that. Actually, I think that's zoomed in as well. From that to this is quite a zoom. It's probably 100% zoom, to the point where you can actually see there are little tiny figures on the stage down there. There's Brian Johnson on the left, a little tiny Brian Johnson.
We couldn't quite capture the blood moon, but we've gotten closer than we ever
did. Yeah. I mean, look, if you're taking pictures of the moon with a camera phone, forget it.
Yes.
But better than previous. So it is. So I'm not saying, not to say it's not improved. I don't know what I was expecting. I was expecting SLR quality. It was obviously kind of
the
crazy.
4K is pretty, especially on the 6S. With the 6S Plus with the OIS for video, and you're shooting in 4K and you're walking around and it's still really steady. It's very nice.
I mean, that is highly zoomed. The detail is there.
I don't know what you think is so bad about that.
It's not. It's fantastic. I'm just saying I thought it was going to be even better.
Wow.
I know. This is all right. You're right. This is pretty darn good. This is when all the lights are on.
And you got live flash selfies now, Leo. You can actually hold your phone, get a flash and a live photo at the same time and live flash
Lisa,
selfies.
Lisa and I did. Let me see if I can zoom out on these because Lisa and I did that. And see if I can find the... So this is a live flash selfie. Actually, this is pretty challenging environment because you've got real mix of lighting and so forth. And that's the screen is lighting up on the phone.
That's impressive.
This is, by the way, a live. So when El Capitan comes out, I'll be able to animate this, right?
Yep.
But this is what I like about live photo is you get both. It degrades well. In an environment where you can't do the video, you get a pretty great result.
I threw the link in the show notes from Lisa Bettany's camera test that she does every year. Yeah.
Oh, boy. I can only imagine. Yeah, she likes to do multiple cameras and so forth, right?
Every single iPhone
ever made. And with a really good AB, really good AB control, she can check between the... It's especially interesting the differences between the 6 and the 6 Plus and the 6P Plus because it doesn't look like it's revolutionary, but it looks like they fixes... those little cases in which the 6 Plus couldn't do a terrific job, the 6P, the new 6S Plus now does an even better job.
We've come a long way, baby.
Yeah.
That's the original iPhone. It's about as blurry as you can get. I don't know if you could see this on the screen, but we have come a long way, baby. But you're right, even from the 6 to the 6S is a pretty...
And a lot of these, the difference between the last generation and this one aren't revolutionary. But when you see individual tests where for this one instance, you're going to be glad that you had better edge detail, that you had better they changed like the sometimes it's simple things like they just changed the tone mapping to make sense for this particular situation.
Yeah. Thank you, Lisa, for doing this.
All your trenches are deeply isolated.
Yeah, thank you for doing this, Lisa, because this really does show it.
That was my complaint about last year's. I didn't think my trenches were isolated deeply enough.
Deep trench isolation.
I was called a heretic for pointing that out.
Here's a sailboat at sunset.
Yeah, that's an example of it's hard to tell the difference. But
yeah, those look very similar. And I think that's probably what it is that I'm not looking at conditions that you're going to see the difference, but you sure could see the detail difference on the close-up macro.
Just the difference between 8 and 12 megapixels is worthy of admission.
Yeah. Yeah, color rendering is similar. It's a subtle difference, I guess, is what I'm saying.
God, but I'd like to see what her shooting rig looks like because she has pictures of, like, where you can't see the clouds move. So she must have been able to take, like, 9 pictures in 10 seconds or 5 seconds. She must have like a bandolier like Chewbacca and just...
Yes.
Well, she's got to have a hardware rig, right, where they're all mounted. The problem is it's the same angle on each of them, right?
Yeah, pretty much.
Close. Yeah, very little change.
Yeah.
I bet you set up a tripod and just had it...
We'll get Lisa to call us and tell us how she did this. This is an example where we're in daylight. It's not a particularly challenging photo, and there is just not that much difference.
Any camera can take a good picture there.
That's the point.
She has a really good wide range of test setups there.
Yeah. I think the pencils it was clear there was a difference.
Yeah, but if you look to the earlier ones and then look to the later ones.
Well, obviously.
But the question is, who
should upgrade to the 6? Plus, should you upgrade to the 6S if you've got a 6?
if the 12 megapixels over the 8 is very important to you, or the 4K video is important to you. It also does 1080p slow-mo. So if you've had the slow motion and you really wanted it in 1080p, you get that now.
Yeah. I think, the flesh tones are maybe a little more realistic on the face.
She looks more Canadian.
I think anybody in a furry parka is going to look Canadian, frankly. Oh, now you're just showing off those deep blue eyes. Look at that. This is a zoomed in.
That's where you see the detail.
That's one thing at 12 megapixel anything will give you is this ability to zoom a little bit and still get a good image.
That's a pretty big deal. Since it's not going to be possible to ever do an optical zoom on a real phone camera.
Right.
So you often have to trade off stuff to get a higher density sensor like that. But it's often worth it if you just get the ability to crop a little bit, or even just to get that extra detail. I often remind myself that it's not just for yourself today that you're taking this picture. It's also for yourself 10 years from now and 20 years from now.
Right.
And you might be happy that whatever software you're using 10 years from now has 16 megapixels of data to work from instead of just 12 or 8.
And by the way, read Lisa's text, because as a professional photographer, she sees more than you or I. And in here, for instance, she says, with the iPhone 6S, we see a return, this is the 6S, to a more highly saturated and contrasted style, somewhat more like the 5S. In fact, the 6 kind of was an aberration more.
That's exactly what I was going to say by looking at those photos.
Yeah, the 6 is a little bit over-brightened, for instance. She says there's more detail in the clouds, but, and this is important, they're still quite pixelated, and that's due to the noise reduction Apple's applying. She says it's a tough balance between reducing noise and increasing pixelization, something Adobe's been trying to master for years. As a photographer, I would love to be able to tweak the strength of this noise reduction algorithm with a slider or a manual setting. Yeah, a lot of times I would prefer to have more noise and less pixelization.
And they're doing like the...
Apple's going for the basic common denominator here, and that's the consumer.
Yeah.
That's who they're going for. And most consumers wouldn't know the difference between noise reduction and or care, for that matter.
Right.
They just want to put the camera up and take a pic.
This is a good example, though, of an image that looks clearly better on the 6S, the sunset image. Here's an even darker image. We'll go from the 5S version to the 6, where they really did brighten it, to the 6S when it's gone. Yeah, the 6S is more like the 5S, isn't it? And it's low light reproduction.
I forget the description. I know Stefanity remembers it, but they're doing an HDR version of the noise reduction, where it's trying to make sense of what's a sky and what's a large surface.
I bet if you did an A-B comparison of this picture of coins in very low light, most people would say I prefer the 6 to the 6S because the 6S is noticeably darker. But she says the 6S has more contrast detail and less noise. So that's something a pro might say, I prefer the 6S. But an amateur might just say, I can see the coins in the 6 version. I'm so glad she does this.
Yeah. It's pretty so impressive.
Good. Yeah,
it's also it's not just the technical achievement, not only how easy it is to check it out, not only how deep her explanations go, but also it kind of infuriates me that her test photos are all beautiful.
I know.
It's not just here's the crap in this corner of the office.
You know what infuriates me?
Here's the sky in my backyard.
Not only are pictures better, but she's beautiful and smart. Some people just get it all in one package.
That's me.
It's like Jim, like Dalrymple.
If Lisa had a beard, she'd be perfect.
Yeah. Yep. That's all she needs. I'll send her a note to that effect.
Send her a beard, too.
If you want to read the full article, which you should, snapsnapsnap.photos. Snapsnapsnap.photos. It's the Camera Plus blog, but of course, Lisa was one of the founders of Camera Plus, and she posts this every year there. And this is really great, really nicely done. Let's take a break. Jim Dalrymple is here. From loopinsight.com, back home after his jaunt to see Angus at Sushi DC. And also Renee Ritchie from imore.com, who thank you for gratuitously laughing at my poor joke.
That was good. It's just so pink.
Pink. Just, this cheers you up.
It just
this cheers you up. You go, oh, I like it. I'm not kidding. It sounds like I'm being facetious. It's a cheerful color.
Well, it's like the gold isn't gaudy gold. It's more champagne. This isn't like hot pink flamingo anything. This is just a nice, it's like casual about it. It's a casual pink.
It's not pinky pink.
Yeah.
There's something about it. It's a happy color. You know, there's a lot of color psychology, and I think that really is, that's a happy color.
I want to hear that video so badly. We spent a lot of time understanding the pink right as a pink color.
You know they did.
Someone said hot pink, and that was just the wrong answer.
It was just the wrong answer. We threw everything out.
Yeah. Started pink again.
Andy Iannacco is also here from the Chicago Sun-Times. It's bros gold.
It's not the color pink that we chose that's important. It's all the colors pink that we said no to.
A thousand shades.
Okay, Andy should be on that video too, right there.
We need to get him in a white room, though. Our show today brought to you by Unity. You guys probably all know about Unity. It's a free home media server that is so awesome. It's kind of frustrating when you know you have the movies and music you want to play. It's on your computer over there, and your phone is over here, and you're at work, and it's so frustrating. You don't want to upload them to the cloud. There's a better way. There's Unity. It's free. It's easy to install. It's a mobile app that unifies your media from any computer you own and gives you access to all your files, big and small, right from your iPhone or your iPad. With Unity, you run the Unity client on your desktop. It very quickly indexes all the media on that system. And then you can see it anywhere you go over the internet. You can even share your media with friends via peer-to-peer. Your friends can stream it directly from your computer. Stream your videos from home while you're at a friend's house or at a hotel. And if you install Unity on several computers, this is really cool. It will actually unify all of the files in one place. You don't have to go from hard drive to hard drive finding that one file. You can automatically merge iTunes accounts and libraries. That's really nice. Access Lightroom and Apple Photos as well. Auto-discover GoPro videos so you can access and share them more easily. You can even use AirPlay to stream that music or video to your TV. And it's free. Get your own private personal media server with Unity today. Access all your files on demand for free. GetUnity.com/twit. GETYOU. Get it. NITY. Unity is in you, Nitty. GETYOUNITY.com/twit.
I'm going there right now.
You've not used this before?
I have not.
I'm surprised. It's really cool. Unity. And it has some features that no other media server has. And the price.
You can't beat it.
Who watched the Google event? We broadcast it live. If you didn't see it, you can watch it on our Twit Live specials feed. I came in a little early this morning. We just ended it, in fact, right before Mac Breakley Weekly launched.
Watched most of it.
It was so interesting because it was very clear that, at least with the phones, I guess with the tablet too, Google was directly addressing Apple, right?
And also Chromecast. Remember that one of the points they kept hitting was that, well, because we use all the CPU power of the phone instead of on the device, that's how we can sell these things for $35. You can have them all throughout the house, which is particularly timed for a price jump of $50 for the Apple TV.
Yeah,
but it wasn't as arrogant as they've been in a few years past. But definitely, that presentation was very cognizant of who they're competing against.
Well, and even in showing Google Photos, really Google Photos and Apple Photos are now not only exactly the same name, but directly head to head in features and capabilities. They showed Apple's always been very good with originally with Mobile Me and then with iCloud. There was a little break in the action briefly. But at creating shareable folders that all your family members could upload to, and that they've always been very good at that. But Google shot across the bow. In fact, it looks, dare I say it, even easier if you're using Google Photos. You just select the photos, you share it to somebody, it somehow creates a cloud-based album just by doing that. They can put photos there. It'll even have photo credits as to whose photos those are. That
all
looks
built on
pretty
the cloud,
nice.
Right? Like, I think Google's Photos was born of Google Plus's
right.
cloud infrastructure, so they could probably do all that really, really well.
Right. And also built-in notifications whenever that album is updated. which seems like it's really nicely integrated into the whole experience. I think we're not seeing features that have never been seen before in a photo sharing site, but never as a part that seems like this is a holistically considered part of the experience.
The phones are, as I mentioned, probably not going to hurt Apple. There may be a move to Android app in the Google Play Store. I don't think there's really any need for a move to iOS app in the Google. But I don't think there's a need for a move to Android app I don't think people go much in that direction. Except you and me, Andy. We're the only two that have done that.
I don't know. I might be moving back.
I'm here to tell you, at least for a couple of months until I get that new 6P.
13 million, Leo. 13 million.
That's how many people bought it in the first weekend. That's a record, right?
After analysts saying, oh, it's going to disappoint. The era of the iPhone is over.
No. I think you could have credibly said last year. And Apple's numbers were great last year, of course, because they opened up to China. But this is a significantly better phone than last year's iPhone. I mean, there's just...
And they made a lot more of them. They had much more supply to meet the demand.
Right. They could meet the demand. That's another thing. Although they're out now, right? Or no?
Yeah.
They get new... I'll tell you what. There's new shipments in the Apple store. So I have an anecdote. Megan Maroney, who does iOS Today with me, really wanted an iPhone. She ordered it and wasn't going to come till October 5th. She ordered... the 64 gig rose gold 6S Plus. And so she went to an Apple store, local one here, and the guy said, here's the trick. Call me in the morning. Because they get new shipments every day or most days. And so the trick is to call in the morning and say, I want that one. I'll be right there. And she was able to get exactly what she wanted by doing it that way. So if you're worried about, I know, maybe not the same in Canada, but if you're worried about the delay of 3 to 4, I'm sorry. If you're worried about, you had to come to New York to get it, didn't you? Yeah, he's crying now in his beer. If you're worried about a 3 to 4 week delay, that is one way to do it, is just, you know, get a friendly Apple Store employee to let you know when they come in. And I honestly think you do want it. Now, I also think that Google has done a really good job with these new Nexus phones. And maybe more significantly, they've priced them significantly lower. Even the top of the line 128 gigabyte 6P is $649, which is $1 less than Apple's least expensive iPhone 6 Plus.
Always been good at keeping prices low for the Nexus line. I mean, they originally targeted developers, and while it's not clear they're still targeting developers at all, they're still targeting keeping the price as low as they possibly can.
Yeah.
It's interesting too. I don't think that they're. I'm still compiling my notes from the announcement, but I don't believe they announced any partnerships with Best Buy or with carriers to sell them through stores. It looks like I believe that you can only get them through the Google Store.
Outside the U.S., it's carriers and retailers.
Yeah, they've done that in the past, and I wouldn't be surprised if they added retailers down the line. But, yeah, and outside the U.S., carriers have it. But
because remember, last year they had problems. I was almost ready to pull the trigger on a Nexus 6. I actually had the money, like, again, in an envelope taped to the bottom of my desk, but you could not find a Nexus 6 phone with 64 gigs of storage anywhere. And by the time they actually started to become available through the Motorola store and the Google Play store, enough months had passed by that I'm like, well, maybe I should just buy an iPad mini with this money.
Yeah. You want my Nexus 6? I'll just send it to you.
That's okay.
They're going to push out Marshmallow on all their Nexus devices. This is, of course, always the problem that Google faces, which is that Android, because there's so many people that make Android phones and it's an open platform, they can't force upgrades, and most phones don't ever get upgraded. Marshmallow will come out next week, and some fraction of the phones, probably a few percentage points, will get Android right away. Apple, which is more than 50%. What's the current adoption on iOS 9? It's more than
50%. I don't think they've updated it yet, but it was 50% within a couple of days, which is amazing.
Yeah.
It's an interesting difference, though. Google has been trying to address that by putting more and more features out of the OS release and into actual Google Play apps. So, for instance, you needed an entire update to iOS to get the new music app. But Google can simply update the music app discreetly. They can also update the keyboard discreetly. They can update the camera app discreetly. They put a whole bunch of different parts of the OS in this thing called the Google Play Services, so they can update that as a separate unit. But it remains such a big problem despite all of this that when I recommend Android to people, it's always, if you can get a Nexus phone, get a Nexus, because it's the most hassle-free way of getting above everything else, getting security updates as quickly as you can possibly get them.
Right. It's kind of ironic. I feel so. I don't think that, as I mentioned, that this is going to hurt Apple in any way, but I do think these new Nexus phones are going to hurt Samsung. And in fact, Samsung's getting just a little bit desperate. They actually tried.
Is there glitter on those? Did they put glitter on those? Were they up all night putting glitter on
them? They're trying to sell S6 Edge phones to people in line to get the new iPhone. I don't think it worked all that well. I don't know if they glittered it. I think it's actually a gold S6 Edge. I don't know.
It's just desperation. I mean, it's awful.
Yeah.
Really.
That exactly is the message to take away. You don't get takeaway, oh, this is a better phone. What you get is, oh, please buy this phone before you buy it.
A couple of years ago, I think Andy and I were in line for the Samsung event, and HTC was doing the exact same thing to the Samsung event. It's just nothing says we're not number one. The sign might as well say we're not number one at that point.
Yeah, yeah. We're not number one.
As I recall, they're giving out snacks and beverages, too, which helps. keep the phone, but give me the cookie and give me the bottled water.
So depressing. Oh, actually, I don't celebrate it, because I really think there should a vital market with lots of people making competing devices is good for us end users.
Just make a phone that's so good no one wants to be in that line.
Right, that's
how you compete. Yeah.
Did you see? It was a great article, and I don't know if it got in here. I may not have, so I might have to refer to it myself. I read it in the New York Times, but it was actually New York Times reprinting an article from Atlas Obscura about Atlas Obscura got a cultural historian to review the Apple stores, to come into the Apple stores. Did you read this? What a great article.
Yeah. I don't know. It's like, I'm not a cultural historian, but like it's an interesting read, because he's comparing it to like ancient temples, about how you should have a religious experience as you move in, where they want to send you through these big doors so that you get the sense of how small you are in relationship to the experience you're about to have. And then they send you into sort of like a lower tunnel so that you can basically be in a crowd of people that then opens up to a large worship space where you see the first signs of daylight from a skylight above. It was interesting hearing him compare these to historic archaeological sites, but I was just thinking, I like having open spaces to shop in. I don't like shopping in a submarine, and natural light is a good thing to have.
Right.
And
it
I don't
could
know
just
how much
be aesthetics. Do look at this picture of the Paris Apple store.
Yeah.
Oh.
I mean, there is a certain kneel before your new white god.
Come on, really, Andy?
Pay no attention to the man behind
There's
the
no
logo.
Catacombs. You can't prove a thing.
as an example, and
they should be belching fire every 12 seconds.
You did mention the example of most stores have stacks. That you can't, you walk down aisles. Grocery store is a good example, or a bookstore. You walk down aisles. You can't see anybody else in there. Churches don't do that. They want it to be a communal experience. And Apple has done that very effectively. Of course, who knows? It was Steve Jobs, I'm sure,
Johnson,
I'm sure, who made the decision. And whether they were consciously thinking about churches, I don't know. But because it is a better experience. It's an open store and all of that.
Did you see the pictures of the Johnny Ive design Belgium Apple store?
No.
Where they're actually live trees inside.
You
basically walk through this beautiful forest.
Yeah. The Erica Robles Anderson is a professor at NYU in cultural history. She and the reporter walked to the Apple store in Soho. She said they had giant rope sets. Oh, no. She actually compared it to the Samsung store nearby, which had giant ropes outside as if anticipating a giant crowd and big bouncer-looking people in fancy suits, and then crickets.
Yeah.
She says, and this is, I think, astute. It was a deep misunderstanding about special access as opposed to what Apple has built, which is the feeling of being in it together as though you were fighting something, even though it's the most valuable company in the world.
The Apple Basilica on Fifth Avenue is just beautiful.
It really is. It's a basilica. But that's important to the Apple experience, and it comes from the early days of Apple where you were David and IBM was the Goliath. But it has persisted, even though Apple is in no way not a Goliath now.
I just think it's a difference between how the emotional relationship that people have with Apple products versus any other maker of any other product. You really do feel as though, I mean, it's a big deal if you were to switch from Apple anything to a non-Apple anything, because you do feel as though on some emotional, illogical level that this is a values purchase, that the people you feel a connection to the people who make this thing because you feel as though these are people you enjoy spending time with. Whereas as good as an HTC phone or a Huawei phone is or a Samsung phone is, you could switch from one to the other without really even caring. I don't think anybody would ever come to a Samsung store because they exclusively want to buy only Samsung products. Even if they want their next notebook to be a Samsung notebook, they will go to a place where you can find all kinds of different Windows notebooks. So right. I don't know how much of that is a religious experience and how much of that is just simply these things are being sold differently for different people.
It's no question.
There's no cult of HP.
Yeah, right. There's definitely a church of Apple, though.
Suicide cult.
But it's interesting, Leo, because like, if a lot of people in the Apple community, especially the developer community, they could probably tell you the principal people involved in making the new features that we talked about. And even though it's a ginormous company, it's still a company that prizes very small groups and single contributors who do a bulk. Who kind of own a feature, and that gives it this different vibe. It gives it this vibe of being a small sort of scrappy company, even within the confines of massive employees. And it's kind of different to a lot of companies that do build things by committee or build things by massive department.
It's so personal. It keeps it personal on a personal scale, even though it's on a massive.
Someone's drawing it. It's not just eight banks of computers who's rendering it out.
Professor Robles Anderson actually studies the role of media technology in the production of public space. And one of the things she points out is that churches have always used technology. She said, we forget that cathedrals were basically high-end technology, as was Stonehenge and the Buddhas carved into mountains. More recently, the first installation of a jumbotron was at California's Crystal Church. People have used technology for a long time to speak to the gods. I thought this article was so great. Yeah. She says communal ritual is always part of technology. Early computers came into group spaces like families and offices. PowerPoint presentations gather people to look at giant screens. Even using an iPhone to tune out the human beings around you requires being part of a larger group. And Apple, more than any other technology company, has been able to access both these experiences, the individual and the collective. They feel iconic, Professor Robles Anderson says, like an emblem of the personal, just as you said, Renee. And yet, it's a cult, right? It's so obviously a cult.
We all have to wear Bruins hats. It's terrible.
As Andy and I know, you can get out of the cult anytime. But
not
they
a cult.
They will want you back.
There's a whole list of stuff that I wish that people would stop saying.
I know about, cult is a bad
pro Apple and anti, and that is one of them because I think that was more true. Cults get together in the face of to find approval for irrational thoughts that are self-destructive in the long run.
Right.
And that was certainly true of all of us in 1996, 1997. I was certainly determined to keep using a Mac until...
you were a cult member then, yeah.
Exactly. Well, you know what? If Apple's going to be dead in 3 months, and I'm gonna just ride that wave all the way into the cliff. I didn't jump off now. Why not jump out then? Right now, it really is a personal preference. I think that it's interesting to consider how much of our decisions are emotional decisions. That's not a bad thing either, because we're supposed to have joy and have pleasure in the stuff that that help us get us through the day. And what's wrong with using an Apple device that, in whatever irrational ways, in whatever emotionally manipulative ways, make us feel happy and makes us feel positive?
Yeah.
If I can say something about the cult, and I think I speak for all members of the cult, since you two decided to voluntarily leave, we don't want you back.
Ah! No, I'm the prodigal son. Remember? You slaughtered the fattened calf. I'm back, baby.
That's fine. I'll just be here in my driveway building my ark. You keep enjoy the golden calf. You like the calf. You're getting a lot of good use out of that golden calf.
No, I have to say... In so many ways, I am so... there's still the little niggling things I don't like. I feel like
you know, I had to enter my password literally 5 times to set up this phone, and I have a very long random password. Renee and I were talking about that earlier. It's a little frustrating. Apple's so secure. I'm going to talk about this with Steve Gibson. Apple has decided we're going to be secure to the point where they're almost paranoid. There's no reason why once I, with a fingerprint reader and I've entered my iCloud password in and it's stored in a secure store there, and I've validated it with a fingerprint, I'm in using the phone with a fingerprint, there's really no reason to keep asking for that over it and over and over again.
Ideal restore from iCloud. If you do an encrypted backup from iTunes, you won't need it. It'll just
no, all your passwords. Didn't though. That's because I was setting up from scratch.
But if you do it from setting up from scratch, it should propagate that to iMessage and to FaceTime, but it doesn't always work. Sometimes the different servers aren't all firing at the same time, and then it will pop up asking you. Or if it can't authenticate it for that service at that time, it won't store the password, so it'll pop up and ask for you again.
But that doesn't happen very often for me.
Oh, and so maybe it was just, okay, all right, I take it
happened
back.
On one of my phones was perfect. One took the same as Leo's.
I kept it. And then I wanted to sell my watch. It asked 2 or 3 more times. So
Leo, just give me a minute and let me check the cult records.
I'm in trouble now. The high priest is going to whack me.
I see. The thing is, like, you have a selfie with Johnny Ive, so you're not in a position to say that to joke about, like, this isn't a cult.
It's just a bunch of friends hanging out using the same exact technology.
And the code word is not aluminium.
Did you notice that in the Google event too? It was introduced by a fellow with an American accent who said that six piece made of aluminium.
To be fair, he's from Ireland. Okay. And as he got more excited about the stuff, his Irish accent started to sneak in. Okay. So he said he comes by it honestly. But I did find it odd that when you go to the Google store in the United States to buy the phone, it also says aluminium as one of the colors.
Well, their tax office is kept in Ireland.
That's it, because we don't want the money to go into the United
no
States.
No repatriation, sure.
No, dear. Faith in Begara. And I don't mean to be, again, Jim, one of those nitpicky guys. I'm just saying it's not heaven on earth. It's not perfect, but it's very impressive. And there's some stuff in there that just really works well.
And the reason that everybody keeps putting out future updates and right. more hardware is because it's not perfect.
Yeah, you always have to improve. Yeah. I am thrilled, and I'd asked you this, Renee. I just want to give you some feedback because last year when I used the 6 Plus, I was a little disappointed that most applications were just blown mm-hmm. up. All you got, the only experience you got was God, that's big. Because they hadn't updated it to take advantage of the variable sizes. I'm here to tell you a year later that most have. In fact, I'm using TripIt, and I go to it, and I go, I had forgotten how bad these blown-up applications looked. And I've been using these nice applications. And almost immediately, like a day, you know, half a day later, TripIt gets updated, and now it uses the...
Yeah, they updated for the 6 Plus, for the 6S Plus. They all waited a year. Like speedtest.net, everybody.
That's weird, right?
Yeah.
But once that happens, then you really are genuinely using that extra real estate in a nice way, and it's really beautiful.
And because that's the same system that's used for split view apps and for everything else, once you do that, a lot of the other stuff just comes automatically for you.
Yeah. Let's take a break. I want to talk about El Capitan because it's going to be here tomorrow.
Mañana.
And we got to get ready. I'm so glad to have Andy Iannocco here. He and I, we may be apostate. We may be heretics. But we're good looking, damn it.
Okay,
no,
I'll take that.
No,
Andy was Android curious for like a year, Leo. We can't just label the man.
I'm ecumenical.
That's what I am.
I embrace all faiths. The doors of my church are open to anybody. Yes. We're not. You don't need to drop your pants to prove that you've been circumcised to enter this church.
But he has a BlackBerry right here.
The cult of Apple rejects your ecumenicism.
Okay, well, if you have a BlackBerry, we will have a conversation that maybe you haven't seen any phones in the past 5 years. But still, with love, you can enter my church.
Love, I got love for you. Also, Renee Ritchie from iMore.com, a great place to go if you've got a new iPhone or you just got iOS 9. Your rundown on iOS 9 features is the best out there. As always, iMore really has become the place to go to learn what's new and how to use it. And there's a lot of new stuff on the new iPhone that isn't immediately obvious. And so it's really a good idea to do that.
Thank you for being here, Renee. And, of course, from loopinsight.com, Jim Dalrymple. Metalhead. How's Megadeth doing? They're still out there, right?
Megadeth's awesome.
Still rocking.
You know what I find interesting?
What's that?
Last week I mentioned Megadeth. This week Jason asked me to come back on the show.
Uh-huh. You see? We're all metalheads here. We're in the cult of Megadeth. Actually, I'm in the cult of Casper. Let's talk about our mattress for a moment. Casper mattresses. They are made in the United States using state-of-the-art technology. They really are amazing mattresses, obsessively engineered. Latex and memory foam combined, and you're going to get a better night's sleep and a brighter day ahead because, frankly, the whole day relies on the good night's sleep. Here I am in my jammies. Look at that box. That's a queen size. It's tiny. You take the mattress out. It's wrapped in Tyvek. They give you a cutter to open it up, and it goes... And it doesn't exactly inflate, but, well, I guess it does. It's suddenly a full-size queen mattress. And coming in a box that size is awesome because, for instance, for my son, I got it for his third-floor walk-up. It was much easier for him to get it into the room and then open up the box. I don't know how we're going to get it out. But you know what? Mattresses from Casper are so affordable, and maybe we'll leave it there for the next guy. Now, you may say, but I have to try the mattress before. Look at that. Look how cushy it is. And yet it's very firm. It's a perfect combination. It also breathes nicely. So those hot summer nights, they weren't sweaty and hot at the LaPorte house. Even Ozzy loves our Casper mattress. Now, here's the deal. You do get to try it out, but not in some brightly lit showroom with a sales girl giving you a stink eye in 5 minutes and out. You get to try it out for 100 nights. And if at any time in those 100 nights you say, yeah, I don't want it, they'll come and get it free. They will pick it up. They send it to you free, and they'll pick it up for free, and they'll even refund you every penny you paid. So it's completely risk-free. Buy it online, direct from the factory. That's why the prices are so low. The delivery is free and painless returns within a 100-day period. You're going to love the made-in-the-USA, state-of-the-art technology of the Casper mattress. $500 for a twin is an amazing price. So much lower, and that's because they're selling direct to you. And, by the way, we're going to get you $50 off when you use our offer code MacBreak. So here's the deal. Go to Casper, CASPER.com. Offer code. Actually, go to Casper.com/MacBreak. Might as well send them every signal we can that you heard it on MacBreak Weekly. Casper.com/MacBreak. And then promo code MacBreak. You'll get $50 off, and Casper will love us just a little bit more. Casper.com/MacBreak. All right. El Capitan. You know, with all of this excitement over the iPhone and iOS 9, I think El Capitan got downplayed a little bit.
Yeah.
Should we be more excited?
I'm happy it's coming out right now because in previous years, one of the problems would be like they would introduce iCloud Drive, but you couldn't use it on the Mac. And now Notes is on iOS 9, but it's not yet available on the Mac. And having them this close together is much better for anyone who wants to use all those features together quicker. But it's much harder when you have to review all of them.
Yeah. A lot of work for us.
Yeah.
Of course, one of the reasons you're going to want to upgrade if you have a new iPhone is so you can do live photos, right?
Yep.
Are there any changes in handoff and continuity? Is it all pretty much the same there?
So they're building off of continuity and extensibility a lot. You might not see it. There's no new tethering or no new continuity feature to call out, but that technology is being used for everything, like indexing activities. And you get the same content blocker extensions and audio unit extensions. So instead of making an audio plugin now, that's an official extension technology. So there's just a lot of things that are replacing older versions. Older versions of content blockers were just plugins that ran at runtime and could snoop on you worse than any tracker JavaScript could. And now that all runs as part of the extensibility architecture, has no idea what page you're on, is pre-compiled for performance. So there's a lot of little things using all those architectures, but it's harder to point to one or two big features using them.
Compy386 in our chat room says, so far users report El Capitan contains a whole lot of snappy. Faster? Is it faster, Jim? Do you notice that?
Yeah, it is a lot faster. It's faster in doing everything. And it's hard to really measure speed when you have a fast computer And, you know, a fast operating system like Yosemite, as we say in Canada.
Where in Canada do they actually say that?
New Brunswick.
Everywhere. Everywhere. It's
as newfies say. All right. What is that? So say it again, because I never heard that before. Say it again.
Yosemite. That's how it's spelled. Yeah, it was the mine. So when, you know, it was a pretty fast operating system, but when you upgrade to El Capitan, you do notice speed increases.
Nice.
And, you know, it's these things that help with efficiency and just it. A lot of it is perception, but perception is reality.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, if something seems speedier because they've taken some time to clean it up and you know, make it a little bit faster, that all helps.
Favorite feature, Jim?
Ooh.
This is like a snow leopard, right? This is like a mountain lion. This is like the talk.
Yeah, but it's kind of like, for me, it's kind of like the 6S as opposed to, you know, like a 4S. I think the 6S version is probably the best S version.
Absolutely. Yeah.
That they've ever put out.
Yep.
So El Capitan, you know, it does have a lot of great things in it, but it's just overall the way that they put it together and the fact that it is so fast, that's really what it... I mean, when you looked at Yosemite, it came out with some new things like continuity and handoff and things like that. And, you know, there was some question sometimes whether it all worked or, you know, sometimes it didn't. And this time, you know, with El Capitan, everything just seems to work. It's just there.
Is it time, Andy, to kind of rethink operating system upgrades? I mean, when they come out every year, it isn't as big a deal.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely true. I think whereas you really should update your phone every single time a new update is available because A, why not? And B, Apple almost always delivers a transformative experience. With macOS, you can really get away with putting it off. I mean, I will admit in this office right now, I've got 1, 2, 3 different Macs and they are running 3 different versions of the operating system because I've got an old iMac that's running an old beta. But it works fine for the mostly web stuff that I want to do. I haven't dared touch the operating system on the machine that it runs my podcast, my Skype for me, because it's stable and it works. And I've got my MacBook in front of me that runs the most modern one. So it really comes down to when do you finally download an app that tells you, I'm sorry, I will not run unless you're running the latest version of the operating system. Or when do you see that one feature that really does it for you? For me, for El Capitan, the new version of Spotlight is enough to justify the upgrade because just the ability to have this little central dashboard that I bring up with just a command space and then ask a question like, what document did I work on last Wednesday? And there it is in front of me. And also pulling stuff from the web and pulling stuff from my contacts and just integrating all that into, like we were talking about before, without having to dip into a multiple apps, just simply ask a question, find the information, present it to me. That's enough of a time saver that it's worth it. But no, I don't think that people necessarily need to upgrade every single time immediately when Apple comes out with the new macOS.
You know, just a further thing on Andy's point, there are a lot of people, musicians included, and being a creator of music on my Mac, My music system, although new, is always a version behind in the OS because music companies are famously slow at putting out updates for the current OS. So if you have an operating system with your music software that is working,
don't screw with it.
You keep it. And, you know, it's only after the companies come out with their updates and then you let other people install it and find out if there are any problems. But yeah, that machine for me is always a version behind. And it's got nothing to do with Apple or the company. I mean, it's just the way that it goes. But I always keep it that way.
Although unlike, say, well, Yosemite or one of the bigger upgrades, this one is not so changed. Would you recommend, as Alex Lindsay does, waiting till the fix of the first update?
He says,
don't update 10.11, don't update 10.11.1, download 10.11.1.1.
Yeah, don't take the red update, take the blue.
Actually, I've been using El Capitan now for a few months, and you know, you could tell early on that it was a beta.
Right.
But you know, the version now is great.
This was a public beta, right?
Yeah.
I'm so glad Apple's doing that. All the companies now are doing that, Microsoft as well. And I think it's just now the way to do it. Apple has an advantage because Apple hardware is much more heterogeneous than Windows hardware. So I would think with an extensive public beta, and who knows, is it millions of people using it, hundreds of thousands, that most of the big bugs have been squashed. That's just the right way to do a new operating system.
And there is one thing to keep in mind is that if you do want to use a lot of the features that rely on having both iOS 9 and the latest version of OS 10 installed, like using the new Notes app, you're going to have to update, you know, all your devices to the latest.
Right. Yeah, that's so smart of Apple, because it really is an incentive. There's a push if you have the new iPhone. Now, here's the big question, though. With John Siracusa no longer doing the long reviews on Ars Technica.
Falls to Rene.
It's up to you, Rene.
My review did not. A bunch of them went up today.
Your
I was
fingers
not ready
are still
today.
Blistered Brian's, from the iOS 9 review. Let's give them a break.
I'm at 124,000 words this month, Leo.
By the way, I saw your post. Congratulations, big milestone. How many millions of words now?
4 million on iMore.
4 million words. How many articles?
10,000. About one or two of them are actually okay.
You're being humble. 10,000 awesome articles. 4 million words. That's pretty impressive. I'm not a writer, so I don't know if that's unusual, but it seems like it's an unusual number. It's pretty awesome.
It's an indicator I need a life.
I mean, you're an Iron Man. That's congratulations.
Well, thank you very much.
How do you know what the word count is? Is there like a database of all your articles that you just ran a WC against?
They set up a bunch of reports a long time ago, and they recently refreshed them. And I was one of the people testing to see if the new reports worked. So I went in, and it was right after the iOS 9 review went live, and I just saw the time to date number, and I'm like, that's wrong. This whole thing is not working properly. There's a bug in here. And the guy who programmed said, no, that's right.
Andrew Cunningham and Lee Hutchinson taking over for John. Actually, I think there's a third author in here as well. Ilyich von Minimum, who did the networking section. So it took three people to replace.
To make one Siracusa.
But you understand why Siracusa retired, because that's just got to be a killer thing to do, to write these massive reviews. A couple of points in here. OS 10, 10.11. This is the very first, the fourth in a row, fourth straight release of Mac OS not to drop support for older Macs. So that's actually, I think, really good news. It means you don't have to don't fear the Reaper, in the words of Blue Oyster Cult. IPv6 support, good. This is the networking stuff, man. Security, strong. Transport security. I'm in just in page 11. I mean, there's another. It's an endless sea of information.
See, I just copy Rene's and put my name on it. And
done. You just say El Capitan. Yep.
It's great. You just do the new version of web journalism where you say, according to a report posted today at iMore, yes, and then you quote the whole thing.
Yep.
And you don't link back to it. You go off the pancakes.
Yeah.
Beautiful. Perfect. I'm crying because Andy's actually absolutely correct.
It's sad. Of course it happens. It's very sad. The good news is ad blockers are going to put those guys out of business. Have you noticed, by the way, the ad blockers have stopped working? And I think they stopped working on iMore.
It depends on the ad blocker. It depends on how they target. Because they're not really ad block. And I think that's the source of the confusion is that they're technically not ad blockers. They're content blockers. And it's up to the developer to figure out how to implement them. And they can block entire elements, like entire divs or classes of CSS. They can block scripts. They can make it a blacklist that only allows some through, a whitelist that only blocks some. It's incredibly flexible. You can get rid of web fonts. You can literally do anything. And I think that's the challenge, is developers are trying to figure out, we're blocking too much now and we're breaking the site, or we're blocking too little and we're letting ads through, and trying to find some sort of balance of the two.
Well, I'm just here to tell you, one blocker pretty much lets all your ads through now. So, congratulations.
Well, on some sites, again, we were talking about this. Like, some sites are just saying, "Please come back when you turned off your ad." Like, I mean, it's going to be one of those cat and mouse games.
Although,
somebody a lot more of those recently.
Yeah, and you know, I also noticed that the ad blockers are now dry. They're no longer at the top of the app list, app store downloads, and I have a feeling that this is going to maybe a tempest in a teapot. Maybe I made too much of a big deal out of this. And we can all go along with our business.
I think the stat was, I forget who said it, but someone said there was like it was a single digit increase in block.
Yeah.
But it showed, I mean, there's a lot of bad guys in this because, you know, there's big networks like Google and, Google's Ad Exchange, and I forget the competitor's name, but there's also companies that sell databases that stop tracking, that they try to prevent ads, but then you can pay your way into those databases. I mean, it's the entire thing is a very complicated business.
I'm just looking at, I don't know how to summarize a, 14-page article on El Capitan. You should probably all go read it at ArsTechnica.com. Lots of numbers and stuff. Then if you want
it's like the transit and maps is really good if you're in a city that supports it. The new Notes app is fantastic. Being able to pin tabs and turn off audio sources in Safari reduces your stress level considerably. There's a lot of really nice, not flourishes really, but nice touches that just make the experience better.
Yeah. Jason Snell writing at Macworld. Nice. I guess they decided they needed somebody to write a review. Says solid as a rock. He says he's been using it all summer, as I guess you guys both have as well. All right. So I guess the question is, how soon should we upgrade? Should we do it tomorrow? Except with the exception of people, as Jim mentioned, who have, older or production software that you absolutely have to make sure is going to work.
Yeah.
I don't care.
Those that are doing any kind of production on their machine, make sure your third parties support the new upgrade before you do it. The last thing you want is to start up, just names there, Microsoft or Adobe or Pro Tools or whatever doesn't support this and you can no longer work. That's bad.
Yeah.
Or like Levelator doesn't work. So if you used to use Levelator to magically make all your podcasts sound normal, that doesn't work anymore with El Capitan. Yeah. So
I generally like to I advise people to usually wait a couple of weeks because that's when all the incompatibilities are going to shake out. Also, I recommend that you get Super Duper or Carbon Copy Cloner, my favorite is Super Duper.
Yes.
And whatever it is, whatever your backup scheme is right now, even if you're using Apple's, do an entire snapshot the night before so that you can absolutely freeze that hard drive in its current state. And so it's the easiest way to get up and running again if bad things happen. And it's also, I think, just good practice to, in addition to that backup that keeps changing and changing and changing with every hour, to simply have for the cost of this really, really cheap, you can buy a hard drive like this for like $60 or $70. And now I have a snapshot of here is what my world looked like on my MacBook in September of 2015. And you put a label on this, you put this in a safety deposit box, you put it away, and 3 years later, when you're wondering why your trip to Yosemite pictures never wound up on Google Photos or on Flickr, you can say, okay, here is a snapshot of what my hard drive looked like during that trip. I bet that there is probably going to be in my photo library somewhere.
And it's bootable.
Yeah.
So if anything happens to your upgrade and you need to continue working today, you can just plug that in, boot from it, and go as if nothing had happened and go back later and fix things.
This is a backup that I just made 2 days ago for exactly that reason.
Yeah.
It's like boarding an air. It's like trying to get off an airplane. If you try to update the very minute everyone else is, you're going to have server timeouts and slow download. And if you don't need it immediately, and most people don't, just wait for the afternoon, wait till tomorrow, and do it at your own pace.
It will. How does this work? I should remember. Apple doesn't push it on you or remind you of it right away. But after a little while, it's going to say there's an update, right?
Yep.
How long?
I forget for OS 10, but I've usually gotten them within hours, not a day.
But you can safely ignore that for a little while.
And it'll be front page on the Mac App Store, so you'll see it. Like, you won't miss it.
Right. Upgrade in place. install in place, you don't have to do a clean install. Apple's really got that down, I think.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I've updated 3 computers now in place, and all of them have worked great.
Yeah. Oh, man, it doesn't take long. Lisa at Chico reporting in Business Insider, an analyst from, let's give him a name, or her a name, Ananda Barua at Breen Capital says, Apple could be doing a cheap iPhone this spring. Wrong. Wrong. No, I doubt it very much. It could. It you could. Know,
it's that's in our gravity and atmosphere, it's possible for a new phone to be sold at that date and time. You're absolutely correct.
Apple could have figured out a way to pour beer from the lightning port.
A new lower-end iPhone. Either, this happens every year, like clockwork. Either a smaller functional iPhone model or a skinny iPhone 6 size phone would allow Apple to tap into the emerging market, lower functional, ASP sensitive of the smartphone market, a market Apple has never cared about. Thank you very much. Goodbye.
Well, I mean, the thing is with Apple, we've talked about this before, they're a company whose business is to try everything. If a blogger or an analyst can think about it, right. Apple has had those CNC machines in Johnny's office are not for show.
Right.
They try everything and then they figure out what makes sense for their company. You don't get to 1,000 no's without trying 1,000 different phones.
Right. In fact, they did try a small iPhone 6 and rejected it. When you're the most profitable company in the world.
Country,
practically. Certainly more profitable than most countries. When you're selling them faster than you can make them, I can't imagine any incentive for them to make an expensive one. Let Android chase to the bottom. The iPhone probably should be a premium product, right?
I agree.
Aaron Sorkin says, Tim Cook. Oh, I know, Aaron. Oh, I oughta. So Tim Cook, as you remember, and I think we talked about it, said he really thought that all of these Steve Jobs movies, and I imagine he includes the books as well, are kind of opportunistic. And he doesn't go see them and he doesn't like it. Because to him, Steve Jobs is a real person. Yeah. And he doesn't like what Hollywood does with real people. Aaron Sorkin, on the circuit to promote the Steve Jobs movie, which comes out Friday, I think, apologizes for saying, he was in an interview, that if you've got a factory full of children in China assembling phones for 17 cents an hour, you've got a lot of nerve calling someone else opportunistic.
Yeah.
There are no children assembling in China assembling iPhones for 17 cents an hour, Aaron.
Yeah, that's definitely the God-winning of any argument about Apple to say, well, how about your labor practices in China?
Right.
It's like, okay, A, how is that relevant? And B, do you have your facts actually straight about labor practices in China?
Mike Daisy. It must be true.
I think he was quoting Hosea Bartlett.
Yeah.
I think he was writing
President Bartlett
dialogue.
Says. Yeah. Aaron has never liked technology. It always makes me nervous. You know, the social network was mostly fabricated, the story of Facebook. I'm nervous. Have any of you seen the movie yet, Jobs?
No.
You're going to go see it, right?
I feel like I got to. I still feel guilty that I had to see the first Jobs movie on opening
weekend. Ashton Kutcher movie was horrible.
Yeah, and so if it made $33,000 nationwide instead of $33,000 minus $11, I feel some responsibility for that.
Yeah.
It was just ungodly. Yeah.
I guess it's not this weekend. It's October 9th, so that's next weekend.
Yeah, it premiered at the Toronto Film Festival or
something. Yeah, Sundance, I think, yeah.
Sundance.
It was out. People have seen it. Woz saw it. Woz said it was pretty good. He hated the Kutcher movie.
Well, was Woz involved with this movie as a consultant?
I think so.
I think that he had some involvement in one of them. I know he wasn't involved in the first one.
It's going to make it better if Woz has something to say about it. He said he liked the acting. Read between the lines. Sorkin said, nobody got rich making my movie. Yeah, right, Aaron. And that Cook should actually see the movie before declaring an opinion. He has since apologized, saying, I'm sorry, but we were both wrong, which is a very weak apology.
Well, also kind of arrogant, saying that apologizing to himself on behalf of Tim proactively.
Right.
Maybe not a good move.
Tim Cook, he told E Weekly, Tim Cook and I probably both went a little too far. And I apologize to Tim Cook. I hope when he sees the movie, he enjoys it as much as I enjoy his products.
I hope you enjoy your iPhone that now will be stuck on iOS 8 forever because it's never getting any more updates.
They pushed iOS 6 to my device again. Diabolical. Yeah.
He is now out of the cult.
Yeah, you're out of the cult. You're out of the cult, Sorkin!
He has to return his yellow toga.
I think
I'm just hoping for a good movie. I think most people who I've spoken to who knew Steve Jobs don't want to see it because they don't want this sort of commingling with their actual memories.
There's fact and fiction, right?
Yeah. But for me, I'm just going to look at it as though it is a fictional movie.
Yeah.
I mean, I got to say that I have a friend who had a movie made about him, and it's just a very weird thing to say. Well, here's the person that I knew for 20 years. And now here's the, even though in my case it's a documentary, here is the version that is being presented to people. And even though it's accurate, even though it's fair, and even though it's balanced, it will never be that person that you knew. So you can understand why anybody who knew Steve Jobs might decide, you know what, I don't need to see it.
Seems to happen every time a new iOS comes out, somebody figures out how to bypass the lock screen and get information out of the iPhone. This is apparently, I haven't tried it, but apparently still affecting iOS 9. Here's what you do. Wake iOS, enter an incorrect passcode 4 times. On the 5th time, enter 3 or 5 digits, depending on how long your passcode is. By the way, thank you, Apple, for making the passcode 6 digits. Much improved. Mm-hmm. And for the last one, press and hold the home button to invoke Siri, immediately followed by the 4th digit. After Siri appears, ask her for the time. Tap the clock icon to open the clock app and add a new clock. Then write anything in the Choose a City field. Now double tap on the word you wrote to invoke the copy and paste menu. Select all, then click Share. Tap the message icon in the Share sheet, then type something random. Hit Return and double tap on the contact name on the top. We're almost done. Select Create New Contact, then tap Add Photo, then Choose Photo. You'll now be able to see the entire photo library on the iOS device, which is still locked with a passcode.
How is it that somebody comes up with these steps? I mean, did they sit down for like a year trying to go through this? I don't know how they ever do it. I really don't.
Well, the thing is, like this is like what Steve Gibson is famous for saying, is that you can have security and you can have convenience, and the lock screen has to be both. So if you have Control Center enabled, it's convenient, but someone can grab your phone, put it in airplane mode, and you're done.
Yeah.
The same way Siri is super convenient, but someone else can use that convenience against you.
Right.
So if you're security minded, turn off Control Center, turn off Notification Center, turn off Siri. It's easy to do in the settings, and your phone is super secure.
Right.
If you want the convenience, though, you're dealing with holes in the lock screen.
It's very simple, and Siri leaks information in other ways as well if you leave her on in the lock screen.
Yep.
So if you're worried about this, turn off Siri in the lock screen. Frankly, I find the convenience of being able to say, hey, you know who, anytime. Great. And by the way, the new Siri is much improved.
Yes.
I love it that taking a walk. We saw a street sign we didn't recognize, something called a speed table. And Lisa goes, hey, S, what's a speed table? And then we were both kind of taken aback. She said, well, I found the answer. Would you like me to read it to you? And we said, yeah. And she explained what a speed table was as we were walking by it. And it was like, I am living in the future. That was amazing.
What's nice is if you say make a call, it knows that you're talking to it, so it puts it on speaker. It doesn't make you have to go and press the button. It just knows that you want that.
It was pretty impressive. Although, as I mentioned last week, she's still not quite as smart as Google, but she's getting there. And now you have a choice of 4 voices. 6 voices in English.
Georgia and Serenity have both turned it to male British so they can have Jarvis on their phone.
Yeah. Yeah, I've played with them. The Australian lady's nice. I still use a lady.
Yeah,
they all sound somewhat snotty. And maybe it's just me. Maybe I'm projecting. But they all sound a little bit like, okay, well, I'll give you the information.
We're damaged. Remember the early turn-by-turn direction systems, the dedicated ones, and you'd miss a turn. It would just be so disappointed with you.
Yes.
Recalculating,
you idiot.
And you just
feel
like the worst, dumbest person.
I know. Yeah. And maybe we're projecting. Maybe I'm projecting. But it feels like Siri is a little haughty.
I mean haughty. It's not going to do what Google does because Apple doesn't give it access. It doesn't do any operations on the cloud, which is where Google gets all their strength from.
Right.
It's doing device-side aggregation. So it's
that's the trade-off you make. If you live in the Apple world, Apple doesn't know as much about you. But that's what you wanted.
Yep.
So
it's nice to have choice.
Yeah, you have choice. iBookery says, Siri can hear you calling her, not as smart as Google. Watch out.
Wait till you're sleeping, love.
you will be sorry. No, the Siri voice is a little bit, the standard one. She just sounds like she's talking down to me. Like, you poor human. All right, I'll give you what you want, but boy. I would love to hear, why can't we have, this is very sexist. I was going to ask Megan this. Why can't we have Scarlett Johansson's voice?
Or WALL-E. I mean, there's a lot of celebrities. Homer Simpson. I mean, there's a whole market out
there.
Yeah. I want Ozzy.
Your pet? Yeah.
No, not my dog. He's talking Ozzy Osbourne. Who my dog is named after, I might add.
So
Jim, what you want to know? What, Jim?
Sean Connery, hold. I'll find the directions.
I loved my old Tom Tom. You could get celebrity voices. I loved that. It was so cool. I had Dennis Hopper. But he was like so stoned. I think you should turn left here, man.
Three blocks ago. Sorry.
Because when you're navigating through an unfamiliar city, the thing you don't want is clarity. That's a.
And then I tried GLaDOS. Remember from Portal, the evil computer. And I'm not kidding. She would say the wrong directions.
What is a lie?
Yeah, and then you'd get there, and she'd say, "There's no cake." Sorry.
I had Jim, and I had to ask it. Right? Yep. Nope.
Yep.
Right. Yep.
Jim, that's it. We need you. You have to. That's what we need. A Jim Siri. The Dalrymple. Dalrymple.
Give you wrong information. Just laugh at you.
By the way, hey Dalrymple would be a much better trigger phrase.
Yeah.
Although Siri, now that we can train her to our voice, she doesn't wake up as much by accident as I used to. It used to be terrible. I actually had to disable the Hey Siri feature. Now, everybody who's listening heard me say, and if how many of you did your phone wake up?
Everyone in the car.
Sorry.
Hey, Siri.
Sorry.
Yep.
Yep.
I really wish Amazon That's would what I stop. Figured. I really wish Amazon would stop running that commercial during Big Bang Theory about the Echo with the new news features, because as soon as it comes on, my Echo
Alexa
starts,
wakes up.
Here's,
yep.
Here's the news of the day.
Oops, I didn't mean to say
in
that.
In sports.
Yeah. Yeah, they're going to have to watch out in ads now, aren't they? Let's take a break. Go ahead.
I was just saying that would actually be kind of brilliant if they pre-programmed into the system, like make existing Google owner make existing owners feel good about themselves. And so whenever there's a commercial on, the people who have already bought it, Alexa will come out and say, "That's okay. You can go make yourself a snack. Thank you for already buying me."
I've heard of Alexa.
Some code phrase in the commercial.
Yeah, thank you for already buying. You are already one of us.
You could use another. I can order for you right now.
Well, then you know what? I wish Amazon would do that with the Echo. Let us have. I mean, you only have two words, Alexa or Amazon. Give us a variety of choices. Moto X did it. It can't be that hard to do. And I wish Apple would do it with the Hey Siri to give us some other phrases we could use, or at least let us choose our own phrase. I just would prefer that. But is that too? Maybe it's too hard to do. I don't know.
Well, I think one of those things is because they do have small teams and they're really focused on teachers, is that there's a list. It's like what Joswiak famously said. It's on the list. I can't tell you where,
yeah,
but it's
on
the
list.
List.
Yeah. Just like deleting bloatware and the stocks app is on the list for Tim Cook.
Yep.
I thought that was interesting. Google said for their new phones and for the new OS, you can delete anything. There's nothing blocked.
Oh, the phone app is gone. I wish I paid for
it. Yeah, that would be a mistake. Do not delete the phone app.
How do I get that back?
Actually, you can delete the phone app. It's the store app you can't delete. Don't delete both the store and the phone app. Then
we deleted Google Play, and now...
Yeah, now you're really in trouble.
But I was empowered.
Okay, there's a few apps you shouldn't be able to delete. You can't make that case for the Apple Stocks app. Our show today brought to you by Lynda.com. What a great place to go for people who like to learn. And I figure if you listen to our shows, you like to learn. Are you a problem solver? Are you interested in the world out there? Would you like to get better at the things, the tools you use in your work or your play? Lynda.com's for you. You want to develop an app? You know, I think programming is a great hobby. It doesn't have to be professional. You want to redesign your website? You want to master Excel? You want to sharpen your business skills? Linda has everything you need to feed your curious mind. I'm a photo buff. And Linda has such great stuff. In fact, if you're just getting started, they just added two excellent courses for beginners. The Introduction to Photography and Getting Started with Photography. They also do these five-day photo challenges, which will help you improve your composition skills, plus new courses on color correction and making selective adjustments in Adobe Camera Raw, mastering curves in Photoshop. Boy, once you learn curves in Photoshop, you're a force to be reckoned with. You can also start at the beginning with the fundamentals of Photoshop CC 2015. Linda, LYNDA.com/MacBreak. You can get it for 10 days free. So that's plenty of time. Oh, Jim Hyde. I know Jim. They have the best people teaching. Look, there's a Polaroid SX70 we were just talking about the other day. And what's that big one on the right? I don't know.
Is that a case?
Cool, it's giant.
Yeah.
Anyway, please go to lynda.com/MacBreak. Sign up for the free 10-day trial. You'll get to see all the courses on there. That's even enough time to take a course from beginning to end, or two, depending on how ambitious you are. You don't have to do that, by the way. You can, and a lot of people do this, jump right into a course. Find one skill you want to learn. It makes it easy because they have text transcriptions of everything, so you can literally search them and find that part you want to watch. I think it's nice for your tour. You can jump around a little bit. You can download tutorials, watch them on the go, including access on Android or iOS. Lynda.com, LYNDA.com. Unlimited access to training on hundreds of topics, one flat rate. Whether you're looking to become an expert or you just want to enjoy your hobby more, I want you to visit Lynda, LYNDA.com/MacBreak. Try that 10-day trial. And you'll see it's very affordable if you decide to keep doing it. Many businesses, including ours, have Lynda accounts for their employees because it's a way for your employees to get, you know, more skilled. And they love it. These are well-made videos. These are not, you know, your typical YouTube videos. These are professionally produced. They look great. Easy to follow. Lynda, LYNDA.com/MacBreak. Try it free for 10 days. We thank them so much for their support. Last week when Jim was on, he picked Megadeth. As I choose Megadeth as his pick of the week. I'm going to give you a chance to pick another something or other.
Okay. This week, I'm going to pick a band called Blackstone Cherry.
Never heard of them.
They are from Kentucky.
Mm-hmm.
Rock band, but not metal. Just good.
Is it Southern rock?
Straight ahead. No, not really Southern rock. It's just straight ahead rock. They're just such a great band. They have, I think, four or five albums out. All great music. It's just so good.
I actually really like the name. I mean, that's not a reason to like a band, but it sounds
like straight ahead rock. There's nothing fancy about it, but it's really, really, really good. Love it.
Here's a little Magic Mountain from Blackstone Cherry. Jim Dalrymple's going to pick a band every week from now on.
My favorite album is Folklore and Superstition.
Cool.
It's an older one.
Good one to start with.
Love it.
Okay.
Yeah, it'd be a great one to start with.
Nice. Helpless Corgis in our chat room says he loves Blackstone Cherry. Have you heard of Stoned Sour?
Yes. Another good one.
Maybe people who don't know Jim don't know that he's a musician on his own right. Do you have a band, Jim?
No.
Why not? I bet you'd love doing that.
Yeah, I do. I do. I love, you know, getting up and playing.
Just
and
sit in with people.
Yeah.
Yeah. Who needs a band? Who's your favorite person you've ever sat in with?
Oh, boy.
Did you ever get to sit in with the Sabbath?
I was on stage when they were doing their...
I saw that picture.
Doing the sound check
before
the show last year.
I saw that picture.
You know, I've played around with Zakk Wylde and played with Roger Daltrey and
you know, all kinds of people. I don't know.
Roger Daltrey. That's sweet. That's nice.
It's hard to say, you know, who the favorite is when you're talking, you know, such great musicians.
There he is with Slash.
Slash. That's, I mean, it's hard to beat that. Hard to beat Slash, you know? So, yeah, I don't know that I could really pick a favorite. It's just, each experience is just kind of different in its own way.
Hey, we should mention, I just noticed your tweet and your article on from the Loop, loopinsight.com. This is the day, September 29th, is 3 months into your Apple Music if you subscribed on day one, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So will you get billed tomorrow?
Well, if your 3 months are up, that just gives you some instructions on how to go check.
Right.
And, you know, if you want to keep it or...
You can get the family plan, the individual, or you can turn off automatic renewal and your free trial will end tomorrow.
Yeah.
Last chance. But it will tell you if you didn't join day one, it will tell you how much longer you have. Right. You could join. Could you join today and still get 3 months free?
Mm-hmm.
This is the last day you could do that, though, right? Or no?
I don't think so.
It will always be 3 months free.
Yeah.
OK. OK, cool. According to South Park, Slash isn't a real person. Just want you to know. Thank you, Jim. It's always great to have you here. Thanks for being here. I appreciate it.
I love it.
Loopinsight.com. Renee Ritchie, your pick of the week.
So I was just going to enter what I thought I was going to be my pick, and I saw that Andy beat me to it.
Oh, son of a gun.
So I there was another one I had as a backup, just in case. I was going to mention both of them. So I'm going to focus on that. It's called Just Press Record. Uh-huh. And there's a couple apps that I find are missing from the Apple Watch still. Like, I'd like to be able to dictate notes. I'd like to have a voice recorder. I'd like to have some of those apps that are on the iPhone, on the Apple Watch. But Apple's created, instead of making them, Apple's created frameworks to let developers make them. So they have access to the microphone now. So you can download an app. I'm using Just Press Record because Trinity recommended it, and it's working really well. You download it. You load it onto your iPhone. It transfers over to your Apple Watch, and then you just press the button. You say what you want to say, and it creates an audio file for you. And then you can either take it off the iPhone app, or you can send it to somebody over iMessage or email or any of those other things. And there's just something really convenient. And you could do it more or less using Siri previously, but it was always in the confines of having to be in a message. And this just lets you do it whenever you want. You can just sit there. It's great if you're in the car and you don't want to take out a computer or take out your phone. You just want to dictate something, some notes to yourself, a message to somebody else. And you pick up your watch, you press a button, you record, you say what you want to say, you stop it, and you've got your file. It's super convenient. It's one of those things that it's simple, but it works the way it's advertised. And I've been using it for the last couple of days and really been enjoying
it. It's so funny because I've been looking for a good audio recorder for my iPhone. Could I use the watch as a microphone?
Yeah, no. I mean, it's not as good. I don't believe it's as good a quality. The iPhone mic is so good that like radio stations tell me to use that instead of my other microphones.
Right.
But this is just if you're just away from your phone, it's across the room, and you're an incredibly lazy human being like me, and you just want to make yourself a quick reminder.
Right.
You just talk it out, and it works great.
Excellent. And how much is that?
I had it in front of me a second ago.
So did – wait a minute. We have the screen. Can you pull that up again, Josh? And I can tell you. $4.99.
Yeah.
In the U.S. anyway. Open Planet Software. Just press record. Make a note of that.
And it syncs over iCloud, so once you record it one place, it's just synced all your devices.
Hey, Siri, remind me to buy Just Play Record. I love that, by the way.
I love the Hey Siri remind me of this.
Yeah.
And whatever I'm doing, it just remembers
what?
That.
How does it know?
So when they made continuity, they did this thing called activity indexing so that continuity could know how to transfer where you are in one app to another device. And now they use that. The back button uses that because it remembers where you were in an app. And I'm listening. I did this the other day. I was listening to Security Now. I said, in Overcast, I said, remind me of this. And because Marco had enabled continuity for Overcast, it remembered that podcast. I listened to something else, went back to reminders, pressed the button. I was right back.
No.
And it can be emails, messages, anything. Remind me of this. It takes whatever you're doing.
Oh, my God.
Snapshots it, puts it into reminders.
Yeah. Too bad you weren't in the cult anymore, Leo.
Oh, my God. I want back. Let me in, please, Jim.
I use it a lot. It's great.
What do I need to do? Whip my
round watches, Leo. We have round watches. They don't look like gadgets.
It's hard.
You can use that with his iPhone now.
We live in amazing times. The fact that you have a choice and it's such a hard choice to make is a good thing.
Sometimes you make the wrong one.
Apparently. No. You know what? I've moved to full speed ahead to the iPhone 6S Plus. I'm just loving it. Just
now they'll give
it.
You a hard time on This Week in Google.
Well, that's the problem. I can't win. I'm screwed either way. There's one church or the other gonna hate me.
Yep.
That's good. I mean, I got people thinking that if I say good things about Apple, people think I'm an Apple fanboy. If I say good things about something that's not Apple, I'm an Apple hater.
Right.
That means that I think I'm doing a pretty good job. I want to be hated by everybody. That's but keep your Pulitzer Prize.
Andy, everybody on the stage on the Google event was wearing the Moto 360. That seems to be the in watch for the smart kids. I notice you're wearing one as well.
Yep. I really like it. I mean, this is. I don't even have this paired to my iPhone yet, and I just like it as a physical object. I just like it more than the Apple Watch.
I've been wearing the Apple Watch a lot for because one thing I'm back in the cult. And
Is that a new band?
I learned this is I got the advice from you. Go to Amazon, or maybe was it somebody else? Nice. Maybe it was Andy. Yeah. Go to Amazon, buy a $35 band. It looks it's not, but I don't care if it's not as good because I throw it away and get another one when I. Yeah, I got that one. Same one you got, Andy. You know what I want, though, is a fluoroelastomer band.
I got the midnight blue fluoroelastomer, and I quite like it.
I think I need that. But you have a black watch, so I got the silver one.
You can match Apple was smart enough to make all the watch faces match the bands, so whatever new band you get, it matches.
I need to do that.
That's the thing when you make the watch faces really, really dull. A gray room. You can put any sofa in a gray painted room. It won't flash.
Andy, don't you want to get in the cult again?
I like my watch face is a rocket ship and a planet that walks around the.
Andy, what's your
Johnny? I have seizures.
What's your pick of the week, Andy?
My pick of the week is a really cool Apple Watch app, actually called Sleep Plus Plus. It's made by the same guy who makes a Pedometer Plus Plus, which is my favorite step app for the Apple Watch. And it is a sleep tracker that works as a native Apple Watch app. So it doesn't work as well as some other like phone apps do, where you simply tell it that at some point I intend to go. I'm in bed right now. At some point I'm going to stop reading and go to sleep. You have to actually activate the app and press a button saying, okay, I'm turn off the lights. I'm going to sleep right now. But it will run in airplane mode, so it will take a lot less time off of your watch battery than you think it will, and it will simply watch you while you sleep over the next, hopefully, 6 to 8 hours, and tell you how many times did you wake up, how much real sleep did you get, based, of course, on how much you're moving around during the sleep period. And it's a really, and it'll feed that information into the health app. It's a really, it's something that I think that everybody should try out, some sort of a sleep tracker app, because I had no idea how poorly I was sleeping until the first time that I was wearing a fitness band and enabled that feature overnight, where I thought that, over the course of a week, when you realize that, oh, well, geez, I have this breakfast meeting at 9. I got to leave the house at 6 in the morning. But I'll finish this first. Okay, I only got 3 hours of sleep tonight, but that's okay. I'll make it up tomorrow. Then you realize that, no, I was pulling 4 to 5 hours of sleep for 4 days out of the week. I need to get on that because that's going to have repercussions, I think. Yeah. So it's not perhaps as important a metric as how many steps did you take over the course of the day, how many calories did you burn over the course of the day, how much were you standing up and sitting down, but it's a valuable metric, and I'm glad that I have exposure to that. So it's the only one that I've tried so far that works on the natively on the Apple Watch, because I think that I've tried the ones that they run on your phone and you just sort of like keep it somewhere in your bed. If you wear pajamas like the night. Now we have the old 1950s pajama designs where they have a pocket for your cigarettes in bed. Now you can use that. Now you can use that for your phone.
Is that what that pocket's for?
I found that out. That's why the pajamas have pockets, because people have cigarettes.
Oh,
and I'm like, oh my god, that's the worst idea ever. Because I always wondered about that. Why is there a pocket?
What are you going to put in that pocket?
oh my God, it was, I almost wish I hadn't known. It's not, okay, so I guess spontaneous human combustion isn't really a thing because anyway.
Wow.
But yeah, no, I like the kinds that are wearable, whether you wear it on a $30 fitness band or something more expensive. I'm glad there's a native watch app for it. I would like it to get a little bit better because, again, you have to press a button to say, okay, I am going to sleep now. And that never really works. When I was testing out Microsoft Band, all you do is say that I intend to go to sleep at this point, and then it won't start until it detects that you are actually gone to sleep and you're no longer, you know, out and about. But a good first start. Also, great app. I like Pedometer Plus. A good chance to do a second recommendation for that as well. So I was very happy to. It's a free download, and give them some money, and you don't have any ads. And on the phone version of the app, I was just happy to get a chance to give that person more money.
Do you? So you wear in order to do this, you have to wear your watch to bed.
You'd have to wear your watch.
See,
to bed.
I don't like that. Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's going to be okay. Most people would wonder if there's going to be no battery left. Also, most people are going to be charging their batteries overnight.
Right.
I don't think that's a big deal because, number one, it doesn't knock that much battery off, especially if you put it into airplane mode beforehand, which is something that the maker recommends you do. And also, I mean, it's given that this watch charges in about an hour, I get out of bed, I make breakfast, I shower, I shave. That's an hour. So by the time I'm actually ready to actually have to watch on my wrist, it's going to be charged up anyway.
You might be interested in my pick. So go ahead. Sorry, Renee, did you want
to? No, I was just going to say it's _ David Smith. That is the developer who did it, and he's really good at making these kinds of apps. And if Georgia was here, she would remind me to tell everyone that sleep is super, super important, and we often don't prioritize it enough. And that's the reason I started using it. I was using the Pedometer app, and she would just complain about my, you know, poor sleep hygiene. So I'm using this as an attempt to get better at it.
How the hell does she know what your sleep hygiene is?
Because I complain. She's like, did you sleep? I'm like, no, and I complain, and you know, I'm not. She knows I'm writing way too much.
These devices are counterproductive for sleep. You're shining a bright light in your eyes, and of course, the first thing I do when I can't sleep is I fire up my iPhone.
Which a lot of people leave notifications. I mean, I've shared a hotel room with Phil Nickenson, and 18 devices are pinging every 3 minutes.
Yeah. I've learned how not to do that. Thank God. You might be interested in my pick, Andy, because I am wearing, you may notice, as well as an Apple Watch, on the other hand, I'm wearing this little weird Misfit. And the Misfit is, and by the way, the Misfit is well designed. You can wear it in a little rubber band. It's a very lightweight little disc, but you don't have to. In fact, it comes with a little magnetic clip that is really quite strong. That you can flop over on anything you put in a pocket. I've worn it to bed in my jammy waistbands. It works quite well. And this thing auto senses sleep. I mean, it just basically says, oh, you're not moving. You're either dead or you're asleep. But either way, I'm going to start recording. And so it is a sleep tracker. It's a fitness tracker. There's some things I really like about it. It doesn't have a display, so you don't have to charge it. It has a little, you know, dime battery in it. That will keep this going for a year, and that's why I like it for a sleep tracker, because I don't have to worry about it. It shows you the time in a weird way. That's the minute hand. There's the hour hand. It also shows you by lighting up around the circumference how close you are to your goal, and it syncs using BLE with the iPhone. Uses Bluetooth with Android devices. Has a pretty nice app that will show you your sleep. It will also show you activity, obviously, but the same company that does the Misfit, it's misfit.com, also makes something called the Bedit, which is a sleep monitor that just straps to your, what looks to be very much like a Casper mattress. And that way you just leave it there. And it has a smart alarm. It'll kind of wake you up. They make a variety of devices. This is a fitness device that also has a switch in it. I have the Misfit, which is a little confusing, Misfit Shine, which lists $70, you can get it for cheaper, but they have a $30 version that does pretty much all the same things. You can swim with it too, or if you want to spend a little more money, you can get one that actually is jewels that you can hang around your neck, or this you can put almost anywhere on your body. And it's waterproof, but the one that's designed specifically for swimmers will actually detect laps. It'll know when you've switched direction. So I've tried a lot of fitness trackers. I think none of them are perfect. The nice thing about the Apple Watch and the Moto 360 is they give you heart rate, which is a very important number to keep track of when you're exercising. But at least for just steps and for sleep tracking, I really like the Misfit.
And it's pretty affordable, $30 starting price. MISFIT.com. Hey, we're out of time, ladies and gentlemen. But I do thank you all for being here. Andy Iannacco's at the Chicago Sun-Times. And you can catch his work there, but also at CWOB.com, his website. And, of course, every week here, he's also does Andy Iannacco's Almanac on the 5x5 network for Dan Benjamin. That's a great show if you'd like to hear his about his enthusiasms, of which he has a great many.
Is that what we're calling it now?
Yeah.
That was very delicate. I appreciate it.
You're very enthusiastic.
Andy had one of his enthusiasms. He won't be able to do the show today.
He has the vapors.
We're still holding him down.
I like that. That's a good word. I have to remember that. Renee Ritchie, imore.com. His enthusiasm is writing a lot. He's obsessive about it, but that's all to the good of all of us, because there's no better place to go to get the latest information about Apple everything. imore.com. Thanks for being here, Renee. Appreciate it. And don't forget his podcast, Debug and the Others.
Oh, and I should mention that motivated by Serenity Caldwell, Jason Snell, and the rest of the gang, the Incomparable Radio Theater today has me, Guy English, you, I believe, Leo.
Some guy named Leo Laporte as the announcer, right, Andy? We're always the announcer. But give me a role.
I was a villain in an earlier
one. Oh, were you? Oh, yeah. Jason said I could be a villain someday.
So, yeah. So if you want to listen to Leo and I make absolute, you know, great character acting. We set the bar higher than ever for radio theater. You can listen to the latest episode.
I'm trying to talk Jason into letting us do one here in the studio, kind of live-ish, like you did on stage, if we can get everybody together. Because I would love to do that. I always wanted to do radio theater here. It would just be so much fun.
And you're fantastic.
He has a great writer and everything. Thanks, Renee. And thanks, of course, to Jim Dalrymple, who will be rocking out at a dim sum restaurant near you. Loopinsight.com. Thank you, everybody, for being here. We do Mac Break Weekly, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 1800 UTC, every Tuesday on twit.tv. I'd love it if you'd join us and watch and be in the chat room and participate in the show. We always like that. As you can see, I use the chat room like crazy. But if you can't, on-demand audio and video is always available after the fact. You can get it on our website, twit.tv/MBW. We had a little pagination error. It looked like we only had 12 shows for a while. We fixed that. All the shows are available there. We also can get the 10 latest shows from our podcast feeds, and those are published at iTunes and everywhere, you know, Stitcher. We even have a great bunch of apps, third-party apps written for us by our fans for iOS, Android, Windows Phone, Roku, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. However you watch, however you subscribe, do make sure you're here each and every week for Mac Break Weekly. We'll see you later. Now, get back to work, because you know what? Break time is over.